All right, we'll start over. Good afternoon, everyone. Today's regular meeting of the Shasta County Elections Commission is now called to order. It is Monday, January 22nd, 2024, and the time is 1:02. The commission will provide members of the public with a public comment open period time where the public may address the commission on any item not listed on the agenda, excuse me, that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of this commission. Members of the public may also comment on any item on the consent calendar or the regular calendar before or during the commission's consideration of that item. Commission action or discussion cannot be taken on non-agendized matters, but the commission may briefly respond to statements or questions. We encourage everyone to fill out a speaker request form and submit it to the clerk of the board there in the back in those little cubbies. The meeting will adjourn by 5 p.m. With that, we will begin with the invocation, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. Lisa, would you do us the honors?
Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing us here safely. We pray for your guidance on this meeting today. We pray that all that we do and say will be honoring to you. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Amen. And Dawn is going to lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So we have public comment time right now. And the first person is Steve Woodrum. Is there a Steve Woodrum?
He's over here. He's coming.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
The 15th Amendment of the Constitution gave black men the right to vote. States with sizable black populations looked for a way to push back. The grandfather clause was one of their ways. It said that if your grandfather was eligible to vote, you can vote without any restrictions. But if your grandfather wasn't eligible to vote, the government can and might deny your right to vote. This sounds fair. It applies to everybody, so it's constitutional. But in fact, it meant that almost every white man could vote in those states, and almost every black man could not vote. That was the intent of the grandfather clause. And pretty quickly, the Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional. Voter suppression isn't just a Southern black-white issue. Back in 1890, if Minnesota had had a sizable black population, they would have used the grandfather clause. New England states used the grandfather clause to discriminate against the Irish. California led the nation in discrimination against Asians. Voter suppression is a nasty undercurrent in American history. It's popular throughout the ages, even though it contradicts the Declaration of Independence, the Pledge of Allegiance, and the Constitution itself. So there's a little bit of the history. Nowadays, voter suppression still pops up. One of the tactics is the idea that we should go back to only one day of in-person voting, no voting by mail, no early voting. Now, again, this sounds fair because it would apply to everybody, but let's tell the truth. That method of voting would make it much harder for people to vote, especially the working poor. There are a lot of people who would not be able to leave their job and go and stand in line for a couple of hours to be able to vote. Now, people like Trump and Steve Bannon know this. They know that this kind of voting system would give the Republicans a tremendous advantage, and that is their intention. Just like the grandfather clause in the 1890, this idea of going back to one-day in-person voting is just another disguised way of voter suppression. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Christian?
Sorry. What can we expect from the panel today? I honestly don't know. But judging from what this panel has done in the past, we might expect this panel to let their friends wander all over the map, talking about borders, talking about the governor, Joe Biden, the Secretary of State, people who are clearly not anywhere in the jurisdiction of this panel, let alone the agenda. We could expect the panel to rewrite the agenda item and vote on it instead of putting it on a future calendar so the public has the 72-hour required by law needed to review and prepare if they wish to do so. We could expect friends of this panel to go on and on and on about their so-called proof of voter fraud in other states, again, clearly not in the jurisdiction of this panel, let alone on the agenda. We might expect their friends to proclaim unsubstantiated accusations, findings made with no legal standing, without any juridicated evidence or juridicated ruling whatsoever, that Kathy Darling, Allen, clerk of and register of voters, needs to be investigated, even arrested, and tried for election law violation. Again, clearly, not in the jurisdiction of this panel by far, let alone the agenda. We might expect one of their friends to announce, "Hey, I'm running for supervisor." And the panel will do nothing, even though it is a Brown Act violation. And in fact, we might expect the panel to give them extra time at this dais to do so. We might expect this panel to let one of their acquaintances insult citizens. And insults are clearly not within your jurisdiction of this panel, let alone the agenda. The panel espouses that it wishes to ensure that business is conducted in an orderly fashion and that all have equal opportunity to observe and participate in the procedures. However, this panel is legally supposed to follow law and nonpartisan and be nonpartisan in its behaviors. But will it? Well, quoting the chair, let's see what happens.
Thank you. How about Patty Plum?
Good afternoon. I'm so happy to be back with you today. It's really an amazing opportunity to stand before our county and understand the power and authority that we have as citizens, as grassroots. And so the past 3-4 years has been quite an education for most of us to be able to understand what has happened to us and why. We didn't get here by accident. We didn't get here on a water slide. It was intentional, and it was set up on purpose. I can remember in 1998 when I came back to visit my mom, and she had a mail-in ballot up by her phone. I said, "Mom, what is this?" And she says, "Oh, I get to mail in my vote now." And I said, "Why would you do that? We have to go with the curtain, you know, in the booth like we always do." And she goes, "Oh, no, we get to mail them now." Even then, before I even understood the chain of custody requirement to protect our vote one day, one vote election, I knew that something was wrong, but I didn't understand why. Until 2020, and now with the benefit of all the flood of information that has come to us, we cannot unknow what we already know now. And we're not going to change. There's been hundreds and even thousands of hours of information that has been gathered all over our nation 3,000 plus counties, we're all in the same position. And what it's going to require is not the state to take care of this for us, because they have proven to betray us time and time again. That's why I mentioned that it's up to us to have the five smooth stones, just as David did, and come up against this uncircumcised Philistine, which is our state. I'm not talking about anyone in our county. People tell me all the time I'm circumcised, that they're circumcised. I'm like, I don't want to hear that from you. So anyways, we need to stay focused, understand that our true enemy is our government. And because we know this, because 58 counties have sheriffs, and they have all declared in the last 5 years, not one time has this Governor Gavin Newsom met with them. Yes.
Can you please address the commission?
Oh, yes, of course. Not one time has the Governor Gavin Newsom met with any of the sheriffs. They used to meet every other month to discuss what is happening county by county, and that has not happened. And so because of that, that the governor has released prisoners without consenting with any of the sheriffs, and the mess that has come because of that, that those choices of not meeting. So with that, we know that the sheriff, our sheriff, has the authority to be able to investigate the crimes in our county, and that's all we're encouraging him to do. In April 2022, we brought him down to a constitutional convention for sheriffs to educate him to understand his authority to protect us in our county. And so with that, we have submitted declarations, almost 400 of them, from the citizens of Shasta County.
Time's up. I'm sorry.
Oh, it still shows I have 20 seconds.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Thanks.
Point of order, though.
So with that, we have submitted to our sheriff, and we have an investigating ongoing of all the information that is so valuable to declare there is a problem here with our elections. There's either fraud or they're illegal ballots, and we are determining all that. We're going to unravel this can of ball of worms, can of snakes, and we're going to see truly what's happened. So we thank you for your part in this. You guys are so valuable in what you're doing. We want the investigation to continue and to be completely thorough. Thank you.
Okay. I apologize. I was getting distracted over here because she was specifically talking about election, the sheriff and affidavits they have put in related to elections. So I'm not sure. Yeah, election issues. Yes. Okay, moving on. How about poll books. Oh, Margaret Cantrell. Thank you. Okay, thank you.
My introduction. We show more due diligence in a football game than we do in our all-important elections. Only in America will we stop a football game, drag out measuring chains, and look at a play 15 times from 6 different angles to make sure the right call was made, but refuse to verify the integrity of an election of the highest office in the land or any other election in the land. We need to get rid of electronic poll books. I believe that the 400 or 384 fraudulent registrations that we found in this county were not entered into our system by our employees. It had to have come from the state or Washington, D.C. In San Joaquin County, they found that the fraudulent votes were being inputted in Washington, D.C. People need to come in when they are home in the county and register on paper. Registrations need to be transferred to a paper poll book. People need to come in person to vote and with proper ID sign the poll book, you know, like in the old days.
Thank you.
Margaret. I just think you knew. Thank you.
I'm not sure exactly what this says, but Yerson Russell or Larson Russell? I'm sorry, what was it?
That's okay. It's Urson Russell.
Urson. Okay.
Hi, how are you today, board members or commission members? I'm new to the commissions and things, been around the boards. My name's Urson Russell. I'm the president of Patriot Force California. And I've been just a citizen that has been working up and down the state for the past couple of years and trying to understand this complexities of our election systems, and they're complex. There's nothing simple about them. We have a system called VoteCal, okay? That's not a conspiracy theory. Go look it up. VoteCal, that's the software solution that connects your voter rolls in the county to the state voter rolls, okay? You need to understand that because there's a lot of things that happen at the state level. National change of address that comes in from the post office that's processed by the EDD for some reason is now updating your records at the county level with inactive voters that then your county has an obligation to go and follow up and do something with. It's all happening to the county. It's not the county happening and actually controlling it going outward. There's a company called DFM and Associates in Irvine, California. You can look them up online. They have a solution called EIMS. And that seems to be the software program that this VoteCal system is using for your county and 46 other counties across California to provide this connection. However your guys are communicating, there's some sort of a connection there between the counties. We have a DMV program that automatically registers people to vote unless you opt out of it. That was passed in 2015 by Governor Brown. What does that mean? It means that if you're not aware of it, that you're actually being automatically registered without your knowledge or approval. We also give driver's licenses and IDs to non-citizens. Does that mean they're all being registered to vote? No. But it's the system that's there that's so complex and so much for everyone to look at constantly because it's happening to the county. It's not the county managing it and then it going out to the state. It's this complete interactivity. And how long has this been going on for? For less than 10 years. For 200-something years, the counties registered and managed all of your voting activity. And in 2016, the VoteCal Act was passed, and most of the counties immediately joined, and within about 12 to 18 months, all the counties joined, and that's how it's all centrally controlled right now. We have 9 organizations that can add voter rolls, and can they change voter rolls? Again, these complexities of a high-tech cybersecurity data management system. That is not what our elected officials are trained for. They have to use every outside resource to understand those complexities. That's the reason why the people, using common sense, want to have local controlled elections where they know their neighbor that they're going to vote, and they know the neighbors that are coming in. And it's counted, and the election night's over, and CNN can talk about something else.
Thank you
so much.
Mr. Russell, first of all, I'd like to thank you for coming and sharing with us. The second is that I would strongly encourage you to go to either our Registrar of Voters office or to any other Registrar of Voters office in California. At our last meeting, we learned that it is not a state-controlled system. It is a cooperative system between the counties and the state. We have here in our county, we learned at the last meeting, 2.5 FTEs who spend their time going through the voter rolls. All that was intended by the legislation in 2015 was to provide more data sources to help our local counties. So,
and have you ever looked at the voter rolls?
I have.
And so you think that 2.5 employees, full-time employees, can manage the daily activities and changes that are constantly affecting your voter rolls from the DMV, from national change of address, from death records, from county records? You believe that two and a half full-time employees can actually manage that?
If I could talk our Board of Supervisors into providing more staff for our elections department, I would do it in a heartbeat.
We don't want more staff. We want simplified elections that are locally controlled and our volunteers. It's cheaper. It's more accountable. It's transparent. You're going the wrong direction. You want more government. You want more cost. You want less oversight by the people.
Okay.
That is what we want.
Okay.
We want oversight.
Okay, sir.
Thank you so much for asking your question.
Okay, next up, Dr. Laura Hobbs. Thank you.
Yes, hello, board. Dr. Laura Hobbs, candidate for Supervisor District 2. I'd like to say that we are not a free people if we do not know that our vote was counted accurately. Every time a fraudulent vote is created and counted, a voter is disenfranchised. The success of our great constitutional republic depends on our ability to self-govern and have representatives elected by we the people. I have been told firsthand by the ROV's office that I was not allowed to challenge any ballots unless I took them to court. This is not true. It is our job as citizens to challenge ballots. The board must instruct the ROV to preserve records. We have a deadline coming up in April. The election records from the primary of June of 2022 is about to be destroyed. We need to preserve those records because there was fraud in that election. I witnessed it firsthand. I analyzed the CVR data. Jeffrey O'Donnell also analyzed the CVR data. Kathy Allen presided over her own election. This is all available to you, and I've presented it to this board. It's also on my website, which is votelaurahobbs.com. You can also go to Shasta, Shasta Citizen Election News and see
point
it there.
Of order, Chair.
What's the problem?
Excuse me, I still have time here. Are you going to pause?
One second, please.
She's campaigning from the
There's team. A point of order. Madam Chair,
yes.
There shall be no public resources used for public campaigning. And so the identification of a candidate who's running for office would be an improper use of public resources.
Okay, but we don't police that, right? I mean, if she's violating some law,
well,
she's violating the law, right?
Well, there's that government code section that that does direct a local officer to not allow it. And so,
okay.
Madam Chair, if you wish, you would be...
Okay, so, right, so...
No, public officer to direct it.
I'm sorry.
That would be...
Okay, do you have the exact reference of that code, I mean, code?
Yes, I can... I can pull it up and I can provide that.
Okay, so it says that... Me as the chair of this commission needs to stop her when she appears to be campaigning?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I respond to that? Because that is the code that she gave me last time that she's supposedly accusing me of violating is code 8314A. And this states that it's illegal for a public official to campaign on county time. However, I am not an elected state local officer, nor appointee, nor an employee, nor a consultant of the county. Therefore, I have a right. This is my constitutionally protected right. This is free speech, okay? And I, county council, I would like to inform you that you are violating my rights. I would like an apology. You are violating U.S. Code 18, Section 242, which says it's illegal to use the color of law to violate my constitutional rights. Okay?
Excuse me, Ms. Hobbs.
Okay.
Ms. Hobbs.
Timer.
Dr. Hobbs.
Please pause my time.
One second. Our counsel was going to say something.
I am happy to cite that to respond as well. Government Code Section 8314 Subdivision A in full states, it is unlawful for any elected state or local officer, including any state or local appointee, employee or consultant, to use or permit others to use public resources for campaign activity or personal or other purposes which are not authorized by law. End quote.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. All right, you guys. So she was at about a minute and a half or so, a minute 40. Okay. When she started back up, did you started the timer back up?
Right. Oh, yeah, you'll get back.
Okay, but she was addressing the issue that was brought up that was not related to the public comment. So can we give her 30 more seconds to finish her public comment?
Thank you, board. So as I was saying, we have a deadline here. And the deadline is fast approaching. I urge you guys as the commissioners here to elevate this to the Board of Supervisors and say we will not allow those public records to be destroyed. We need to investigate this. This needs to, I believe that the Board of Supervisors need to compel and use all force they have behind the law to compel the ROV to hand over these records and to retain them. So this is based on the data that I analyzed, which I said is publicly available, and it's my letter to the sheriff, if you want to look it up. And so far, nobody has been able to refute this based on data. If you want to refute you have to better data. Show me your data. Now you're interrupting my time again, so can you please pause?
Just keep going. You've got about 10 seconds.
Well, I just want to say that this is a violation. This is a pattern of the county council. They will try to threaten and intimidate you and use the color of law, and you guys need to fight and be strong and bold against that.
Thank you. Okay. Would you like to respond at all to anything?
I would just like to point out that we are working on the deficits that your analysis show, so we will be talking about that at some point in the future. I'd also like to remind this committee that the same thing that happened when it was requested that the board take action against the registrar of voters and her destruction of records from the November 2020 election, that the board made the decision not to follow through on that because they do not have jurisdiction.
Okay, how about you, Don?
I just wanted to point out that the code section that Dr. Hobbs is using regarding her right to campaign from the dais also includes our duty as officers to prohibit that. And so if you read further down in the code section, it's on your Facebook page, it says that public officers should not allow it to happen. So that would be our chair's role. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Next.
Can you turn it on? Because they're having a conversation.
Okay. Thank you. So if I come up here and say Laura Hobbs, candidate for Supervisor District 2, I can identify myself any way that I want. I can come up here and say, Laura Hobbs, I'm a cat and I'd like to use a litter box. Okay, so
Laura,
I'm allowed to choose how I want to identify myself. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. How about Mr. Douglas Frank?
This is an agenda item. I understand I have a longer time than 3 minutes. Oh, this isn't the agenda.
This is public comment.
Okay. Then I'll keep it to public comment, and the agenda item is later? Gotcha. All right. Thank you for correcting me. I'll just comment a couple of things. It's never okay to sacrifice election integrity for convenience. Okay. You don't give away the election to make sure that every person can vote. Excuse me, sir. Get a haircut. The jurisdiction.
Point of order.
Okay. Can everybody calm down? Christian, can you keep your mouth quiet, please?
Sure,
okay. And everybody try to refrain from making rude comments. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
The thing about Shasta County, this is my second time speaking in this place. I'm proud of Shasta County. I was conceived here, so I'm proud of this place. But what is particularly important is the people here, the citizens, are doing their job. Their job is to police the integrity of the voter rolls. Urson Russell brought up the notion, the fact that when vote call was brought into effect in 2016, it essentially eliminated the accountability on the integrity of the voter rolls. That's always been the constitutional obligation and right of the citizens to do. Well, in this county, a group of citizens 2 years ago, I know I helped them do this, discovered at least 350, I think it's closer to 400 now, suspicious cases of voter fraud or illegal voting. They are investigating that. I've met with your sheriff. I've met with your I didn't meet with your sheriff. I met with your investigators and one of your deputies, and we've shown it to them, and there's an actual case number in place. So this is a public process being driven by the citizens that you need to listen to. Those cases are being investigated right now. And as we bring you cases of fraud and bring you cases of illegal voting, you're going to have to address it. And the core problem, the reason it's possible and the reason it exists, is because, as Urson pointed out, you are no longer in control of your voter rolls. Multiple people have access to your voter rolls. In my later presentation, I will show you how, because of that, your voter rolls are now centrally controlled. So that's what that'll be about. But what is important about this, what's important to me right now that you understand, is this is not a government action that's taking place by government officials. This is a government action taking place by we the people, the actual government, the sovereigns. We're not coming to you asking for permission. You work for us. We are coming to you as citizens and saying, we have a serious problem with our elections. Here's the evidence. Here's the case number. We have a case number. We have probable cause. You have a serious issue. And you cannot sacrifice our constitutional rights to our votes by using a system which disenfranchises us from that constitutional right. So we're going to be asking you, which you already took action. I see I have 30 seconds. That's what that beep means?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Your Board of Commissioners recognized that the integrity of your elections was under threat, which is why they took action last year. And I understand that the state doesn't like that, and they're coming after you. Why would the state care so much how you ran your elections? That's an interesting question as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Nathan Blaze.
So I think this whole thing is stupid and pointless. The fact that we're even having the power on in this building right now to do this makes absolutely no sense to me. I know that you three, Ronnie and Lisa and Bev, strongly supported the recall of Leonard Modi. And now you're up here because you got radicalized by all this election fraud bullcrap. You're not actually helping the county. When you bring in people like this charlatan over here with his little charts and his little graphs trying to convince you that the election was stolen while you go to his little seminars and pay him your hard-earned money is ridiculous. He is making a fool out of all of you. That's what he's doing. And the fact that you're even talking about voter fraud and election integrity, you guys realize that the only time you talk about that is when you lose elections? So how on earth is there only voter fraud when you guys don't win? That is just simple, basic logic. Trump said a thing at some point, and you guys were all so entitled and so mad that you didn't win that you just wanted to believe it. It's called willful ignorance. That is what you are. That is what all of you are, is willfully ignorant. You guys didn't complain when Kevin Cry won. You didn't complain when Chris Kellstrom won. There was no voter fraud there. Why is there voter fraud here now?
They won despite the fraud.
Oh, yeah, no, that's your BS argument. Oh, my God. That is, see, you guys always just make up another thing. Another thing. There's always another thing to say that's not the damn truth. And I am sick of it. I have been coming to these meetings dealing with these idiots for years now. You idiots, believing all this crap. I need to believe as a human, as a member of this community for the last 30 years that there is some semblance of sanity left in the people of this community. And I do not see it with this current gaggle of sheep.
Okay.
No, I'm from here. I'm not going anywhere. And you guys know that. You know I'm not going anywhere.
Nathan, please address the commission.
I just was. But they were talking to me, so I was responding. I think I should be allowed to do that.
Keep it going. Come on.
All right. Anyways, that's all I needed to say. And I meant every word of that. You guys are being ridiculous. You're wasting their time. You're wasting their time. You're wasting all of our time. If there is election fraud actually prove it.
Thank you.
Chair Lund.
Yes.
I'd like to make a comment.
Sure.
Okay, so I just wanted to say that we understand that everyone here is passionate about elections on both sides of this argument, but it really doesn't accomplish anything to have a lack of decorum and name calling. I'm speaking to both sides right now. So I just like everyone to just simmer down just a little bit and let's do some business and get to the bottom of things here. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Duckett. Jenny. Is Jenny here?
She's come.
I guess good morning, beautiful commission. It's commission now, right? Sorry. So I was able to make it to one of Douglas Frank's town halls. That's what that is, yeah. And I listened. I sat and I listened for a while to understand what exactly, I'll call it the hype behind him is. Because there's definitely a lot of strong emotions attached to him on either side. Whether you're a person who completely believes in what he's saying or whether you're someone who doesn't, he definitely evokes a very strong emotion in people. So my first question was why? Why do we believe him in the first place? And I found when I did public speaking as a class, they said that a person is believable when they're likable. And he's very likable. When I showed up, he was hugging people, talking to people, shaking hands, talking to them about their personal lives, like he remembers. And that does make it easier to want to hear what he has to say. However, I do agree that he uses facts. There are facts in what he has to say. But he brought it up himself that they're not, that certain election professionals, we'll call it, don't call them the whole facts. And so, like, I have this little graph here that he presented at the town hall. And it is correct. Our population hasn't really grown, but the number of registers has. However, if you really look into it, it's because, like, the first time he named it was 2008, that there was a boom in growth for people who registered to vote in 2008. But if you remember correctly, that's when Barack Obama ran. And there was a huge group of people both for and against. There was a large number of people who had never been a part of politics before who suddenly registered. So it's not about being over 18. It's not about I hit 18 and I registered. My husband's one of those people who was like almost 30 when he registered, because that was the first time he got involved. In 2016, we have Bernie Sanders, who really drove people that never would have been involved otherwise. And then, of course, as it continued between Hillary and Trump, it got to be very volatile, and it, of course, involved more people. So, yes, the population hasn't grown, the number of people over 18, and the number of people voting has, but it's because these elections were so volatile.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Rick H.
Good afternoon, Commission. The gentleman that was up here, he said, when you guys don't win, who are you guys? Well, you guys are we the people. And when we don't win, we want to look into why we didn't win. We the people are you guys, okay? What do we want? We would like to clean up the rolls, actually clean up the voter rolls. we would like to mandate verified IDs. Not just IDs that you get out of the Cracker Jack box, verified IDs. Paper ballots with hand counting. We would like that. We the people would like that. Get rid of all mail-in ballots and the drop boxes. We the people would like that. One-day voting on election day. We are talking about voting here, right? Elections, it's not a point of order. This is elections I'm talking about. Everything I'm talking about on my piece of paper does not need to be interrupted by anybody saying point of order because it all has to do with elections. So one-day voting on election day, make it a holiday. What's wrong with that? We the people want that. Smaller precincts ran by the people, not Kathy Darling Allen. Get rid of ballot harvesting. What the heck is that for? Transparency. That is just something that I cannot believe it. Where we are at in our local government. And I hear this stuff about we're this red place and all that. We're not red. We're not even blue. We're completely divided around here. And we all should be coming together and becoming we the people again. We the people are who was cheated. And we the people want to look into those cheats. And we're not going to stop. We're not going to let up. You're not going to get rid of us by some intimidators here taking our pictures and posting us. It's not going to happen. I'm not going anywhere. It only motivates me to come down, write more stuff on a piece of paper, and come up here and speak it again. And I'm going to be motivated even more every time I see something like that. And you tell us to calm down when the person that was disrupting the meeting left the building. What is that? I would actually like to take these things serious.
Thank you.
I would just like to respond to that. My comments were for everyone, including Mr. Blaze, including Christian, everyone speaking out from your seats. Let's respect the sanctity of these chambers. Thank you.
Yeah, that said, I would really like to ask that people do not make comments while somebody is at the podium speaking. Please, clapping is fine, but making verbal comments, please stop. I appreciate it. All right. So how about Casey?
Good afternoon. I just want to give a few examples of the failure of our election system here in Shasta County. What is most important with an election, a fair and secure election, Kathy Allen has been failing at for a very long time. We the people of Shasta County deserve so much better. Elections are not reconciled. Can Kathy count? Voter rolls are dirty. What has she been sweeping under the rug? She put up a $25,000 fence to keep election observers out during the last election. Kathy Allen meets with well-known far-left groups, such as the nefarious Zuckerberg group. Joanna, her associate, has been known to be a part of a Democrat NGO. Kathy Allen, with all her actions and statements, shows she is for central control and thus enabling fraud. Kathy Allen oversees her own elections with fake transparency. Kathy Allen does not follow state laws, as I've observed as an election observer. The camera system is a joke in the elections office, especially during the active election, where most of it is not even covered, and if there was coverage or there is coverage, then that gets immediately erased. That is not transparency. That is a crime in itself. We have state-of-the-art cameras, you know, taking 10 pictures or whatever videos of people who don't fully stop at a red light. We're not protecting our voters, and that is paramount for our country to be secure and to have the vote of and the voice of the people. So
The ROV leaves taxpayers liable by denying public records requests, which is legally defined as belonging to the people. The ROV is legally required to help the requester find the right records. Why has Kathy Allen been hiding what belongs to the people of Shasta County? We're liable. In Nevada County, taxpayers had to pay out $85,000 for denying election public records. Why is she hiding? What is she hiding? That's the question. Why isn't it transparent? There's a lot to uncover here, and this is just the beginning of her years of her being over our election system in Shasta County.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else for public comment?
Lori Bridgeford, and I'm doing public comment. And if you just saw what happened here, this individual that continually disrupts took the camera pose, held up paper, so again, hijacking. I have a quick question when I'm done. Is can anyone on this commission redirect and ask people to stop? Early on, it was the same two people that are good friends with ROV Allen. I call them at this point parasitic. They're here to distract and divide. Here we go. Catch what's going on here.
Okay. All right.
Stop my time.
Yeah, stop her time, please. Could I get some advice?
On that sheet of paper,
out.
It says, be polite. Yes.
Yeah, but I
how
mean,
many times?
What would what
you know? We are all recommend? Volunteers here. We are taking time away from our families. This is not a joke.
Same with us.
Kristen. Can you please have a seat?
I think I have a First Amendment right to stand right where I am.
It's distracting.
And
you're intimidated.
So what's Madam? Your opinion, Don?
I think we should call a recess.
Okay.
We need security.
We are going to call a recess for 10 minutes.
Hope Kathy Allen's watching this and I get my time back.
Thank you. We're reconvening the meeting of the Shasta County Election Commission at 2:04. And we were in the middle of public comment with Lori Bridgeford. And okay. Lori, you have two minutes and 26 seconds.
Thank you, Chair. As I was saying, my last comment was regarding the security of this room, and I understand we just have one individual paid by Securitas in charge of the entire building, which includes the parking lot. So when we have outbursts and incidents and other massive distractions that we've all endured for a long, long time, and it's the same two to three people, being me mainly, and my concern is, and I don't know if you answered the question, afterward you can. Can any one of you halt the meeting to redirect okay. your friends?
I sincerely apologize. I sat here, relaxed Stop for a clock. Second, and completely forgot what I was going to come back and say after our break. So I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but we convened, and I am requesting that the public not clap, not boo, not do anything. We're just having public comment where people come up and they get their 3 minutes. And I don't know if anybody has any questions about that, but it should be really clear. And if there's a problem with that and you guys continue to be ruckus and clap and make noises and make gestures and boos and this and that, then we will shut down the meeting, have everybody leave, and bring the media back in and continue our meeting, because we do have business to get to, and we're already over an hour into the meeting. So that's how we're going to play it.
Okay, so when you say we, you mean Don can stop the meeting, Susan Barrymore can stop the meeting, or do they just look at you like you're supposed to magically do something? It's
don't worry about it. That's not your business.
Okay.
That's our business.
Well, I'm watching a lot of moving pieces, and I'm just saying.
Your public comment, so about elections.
So here's what happens when we have this kind of decorum just go sideways, is when any of us are talking over the target, we're making complete rational and logical sense, they'll pipe up and start to interrupt. So I don't like the victim role. I have been a subject of cyberbullying by, the main person, and then they're friends of Dawn and Susan. So they're still sitting here as a commissioner. So this is part of my comment, that we're all looking for more faith and trust in the system. Yes, there's probably people that won an election that shouldn't have, and there's people that should not have won and totally won. So it's what we want is it for to all stop, and this is why we're going to be blessed with some information again from Dr. Douglas Frank. And I just want to say that the quorum, when I was at the last Board of Supervisor meeting, and when you have a public citizen who is a doctor, a PhD, and they're being called up for public comment, as Dr. Laura Hobbs, great burst of laughter by that side on that part of the chambers. And I just thought that was completely disrespectful once again. So I applaud Dr. Laura Hobbs when she stands up for her right, her First Amendment right to say what she needs to. I have 30 seconds. And so I really think there's more to it, because when we don't see Kathy Allen, ROV, here, I'm quite certain she's either texting, watching, and a part of this whole theatrics. Yeah, S show, I heard, yeah. So just Don Duckett and Susan Barrymore, I would really like you to start facing your role with these people, because I've been a part of this harm and damage. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Nettie?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity here. So I actually was just going to come to observe, but there was a gentleman here in the plaid that had made comments that I really want to respond to. So he said that he was representing and saying that it's voter suppression, where those who are severely poor couldn't make it and wouldn't have the time to vote, and that's why mailing ballots is necessary. So I'm here to tell you, as an Asian American who grew up in a dirt poor family, where my mother singly raised 7 kids, we all had time to vote. And she knew how to get her driver's license. She didn't speak a lick of English, and she managed to figure out a way and work with other people to get her license. Now, this isn't any different with having the ability to vote and have the opportunity to vote. So he also mentioned that it's voter suppression, but their election law says there's time off to vote. The election code is 14001, requires employers to post a notice to employees advising them of the provisions for taking paid leave for the purpose of voting in statewide elections. A sample of this notice you can find on the website. The employees are eligible for paid time off for the purpose of voting only if they do not have sufficient time outside of work hours to vote. So the intent of the law is to provide an opportunity to vote to workers who could not or are not able to do so because of their jobs. Polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. That's 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. I have worked double shifts before, and I managed to get there to vote, okay? So employees can be given as much time as they need in order to vote, but only a maximum of 2 hours is paid. So it's not like they're not getting paid. And unless there's something that's happening that's preventing them to go there, they have that option. Employers may require employees to give advance notice that they will need additional time off for voting. So I just want to make that clear. There's no voter suppression here. We may not speak English, but we're not ignorant. And I just want to make that really clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Please hold your applause. Thank you. Okay. I'm assuming you're coming up.
Good afternoon. I'm Jim Burnett, and I just wanted to say thanks to this commission. I think you guys are in the right place at the right time, and I really hope that you guys can make a difference in, well, of restoring some confidence in our voting system. I want to echo Laura Hobbs and say that I, too, urge that you guys do everything you can, maybe influence the Board of Supervisors, to try to preserve those records from the June 2022 election, because the more auditing, the better. There's so many of us that have an inherent and well-founded distrust of black boxes, the electronic voting machines and tabulation devices. We don't want them. They are proprietary. You've heard all these arguments before, but they're still true. We have no means of auditing these things, and that's why we want to try to push back on AB 969, too. So whatever you can do in that regard, that would be great. And then finally, we hear a lot about voter suppression, but I think we're looking at it through the wrong end of the telescope. There's widespread voter suppression every time a legally cast ballot is nullified by some vote that was cast by somebody who did not have the right to vote. And there's so much voter fraud going on, or so much election voting fraud going on, that a lot of people that shouldn't be casting ballots are, simply because the government at all levels, federal, state, and local, are making it really easy to get registered. So that's where the that's where the real fraud is in my book. There's a lot of votes that were legally cast that are being nullified. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else for public comment?
Thanks for the opportunity.
Can you state your name, sir?
Yeah, my name's Thomas. I think when this person here gets up and stands over here, that this person should stop. His 3 minutes should stop until he sits down.
If you can do your best to ignore him.
No, it's bothering me. I can't talk. My train of thought, he's infringing upon my rights.
Okay.
Now, we don't do that when he does it.
Right.
So does his long hair give him special permission, or is he a pretty boy or what? And it's my thought. He's interrupting my thoughts, and you guys have a right to stop it. And you guys are American. You're letting him get away with it.
Okay, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, just don't look at him. And is there something about elections you'd like to share with us?
This is a reflection of our elections. But, again, you're letting this guy get away with this?
I've been advised by counsel he has a First Amendment right to stand there
and interrupt my permission, because it bothered me.
He's not interrupting.
If he wants to stand up, put him back in the machine.
Sir, would you like to speak about anything related to elections right now?
This is elections. Right now, this is part of our election. This is election meeting. And you're not doing anything.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we've asked everybody. I have asked. Well,
everyone is, except this guy. Okay. His grandma told him he's pretty.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. Okay. Anybody else?
My comment is going to be real quick here. First of all, I love the entertainment. I like they brought in the class clowns today to entertain us. But my question, I want to direct a question at Ms. Bearmore directly. If you're so sure that everything is transparent, legal, and accurate, why in the hell are you so afraid of checking things out? If we're wrong, we will admit we're wrong. You do not want to hear what we have to say because you're hell-bent on doing what you want to do.
Sir, can you please address the commission? And if you would like to speak with Ms. Barrymore, I was just going to say.
Thank you very much. I will do that. But let me address it. Let me address it in the context of the board or the commission. Why are you guys so afraid of hearing evidence and allegations that there is voter fraud and illegal voting if you're so sure the system is so good? I don't understand. It seems common sense that if you got a number of people on a regular basis complaining about something, then maybe you should take the position of educating us as to why the system is so good.
Thank you, sir. Okay, anybody else for public comment? That's what I was going to suggest. Okay. All righty. Okay, moving on to regular or consent calendar. And I'll let Clerk of the Board address this.
Chair Kristen Gulling-Smith, Clerk of the Board. I just wanted to announce that the minutes, as listed on the agenda, have been pulled from consideration today due to an error with the item not having the attachments in the agenda packet. So they will come back to our next meeting.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to R1. Receive a presentation from Dr. Douglas Frank entitled Evidence That Our Elections Are Centrally Controlled. You're on.
Thank you for hearing me. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm grateful. I don't think these minutes are correct. Are you going to start the clock? I'm sorry. I was just trying to help. Is that not right?
No.
I'll go ahead. Yeah, no worries. Thank you. Let's review for a minute. I think it would be helpful for us to review. First of all, Shasta County citizens performed a canvassing audit because they have reasons to suspect the security and integrity of their elections. That's a good thing. When citizens get involved because they suspect something is wrong, that's good. Two, they're implementing their constitutional rights, which are not merely rights, but also their civic duty. It's their responsibility to do so. If you know something is wrong as a citizen, you're not supposed to wait for government to fix it. You are the government. You're supposed to take action. They've done that, and I think you guys should applaud this. I've been all over the country, and not every county has groups of citizens that do the work like this. This is a good thing. You should applaud this. Third thing is they've provided probable cause of election fraud and election illegal voting to the sheriff. I've been in these meetings. I've heard it myself. They have done this. So in other words, they are doing their civic duties perfectly, just exactly as they should. And the sheriff acknowledged this and assigned a case number to it. So there's nothing, it's not a frivolous charge. It has probable cause. It has case numbers assigned to it. The citizens are continuing to investigate those cases. And there are many cases of illegal and fraudulent voting that are going to be coming forward. I've looked at several of them myself, and because I've analyzed 48 states, over 3,000 counties, I recognize these trends. I recognize what these issues are, and they are valid. And when they bring them to your attention, as we already brought them to the sheriff's attention, you're going to be, I think, quite shocked. So they've invited me, the citizens of Shasta County have invited me here to help them with this analysis. Why? Because I've been doing this all over the country, and I have a lot of experience, and they wanted help, and I'm delighted to do it. I do so at no charge, and I'm here at no charge. So I'm not a very good grifter if I'm here selling you my services because I charge nothing, okay? So that should tell you something. That's important for you to know. Now, I have performed an in-depth analysis of your county, and I presented those data. I loved the young lady who was here, and we seem to have a difference of opinion on things, but that's okay. This is America. I tell people I disagree with my wife on stuff, but we still sleep together. So this lovely lady, she checked out my data and confirmed that all of my data are accurate. Everything I'm presenting to you is publicly available data. You can validate what I found. She has a different point of view. Power to her. Let's have a discussion. And that's what this is all about. Now, my Shasta County analysis, I'll get to that, are consistent with what I found around the country. And what I found throughout the United States is that our elections are no longer being run at a local level. And that is especially true here in California since 2016, as Urson Russell pointed out with VoteCal. You still do not have voter's choice in your county, and I urge you to not implement that as well. Voter's choice is what allows citizens to vote anywhere they want in the county. It's not precinct-level voting anymore, because that's yet one more way that the election loses integrity. We should be trying to increase the integrity and increase the security and increase the transparency of our elections, not the opposite direction. So voter's choice is actually the wrong direction. Now, this county has more than enough evidence of election concerns, which is why this commission was established. Not every county has established commissions like you guys, and I thank you for Ms. Duckett. I appreciate that you're giving your private time for this. I appreciate it that you have devoted this time. This is an extremely important commission. I applaud you for that, and I have been speaking about you all around the country to recommend what you guys are doing to other counties. If you like in San Joaquin County, they did the same thing. And I just want to mention San Joaquin County in a special way because it's related to you. And that's that when the sheriff in San Joaquin County was presented with evidence and probable cause of election fraud, analogous to what they've done here, he launched an investigation, and you will read in the newspapers that they have convictions of election fraud. It wasn't frivolous. And in the same way, we have presented the similar kind of evidence here that would lead to convictions, illegal voting and fraudulent voting. But furthermore, the sheriffs and the sheriff's department in that county has since enrolled several other county sheriffs in the investigation as well, and Urson alluded to it earlier. This is a statewide problem, as they have been uncovering through the voter rolls. And so one of my first recommendations to this board and to your county is that you cut the umbilical cord to the state vote cow system. Why? Not because I don't trust anybody here, but because as soon as you give multiple points of access to a system, you open it up to the potential of fraud and the potential of manipulation, which I have shown statistically is taking place. Now, it's important you understand that when you make a statistical argument, that's a valid argument, but it doesn't necessarily provide proof of actual wrongdoing. It'd be sort of like if I came in here and said, you know, the murder rate has gone up in the county of Shasta County. Everybody might wring their hands and say, oh, this is terrible, this is terrible. But when people actually start producing the dead bodies, that's when everybody goes, oh, wow, this is real. This isn't merely statistics. And most of the data that I present in public is statistical, and that's why it's so important that what we're talking about is not merely the statistics that I've provided. The statistics I've provided point you to where the problems are, and guess what? The local citizens have investigated because of those statistical pointers, and they have uncovered almost 400 cases, serious cases, which we are further investigating as well. So this is not a frivolous thing. The whole thing makes sense. It's scientific. We've set up standards. We've set up controls. We've done investigations. We've filed the proper paperwork with the sheriff. This is a real deal. So it's important that you recognize that this is not some wackadoodle theory. We're following a procedure and providing all the evidence. Now, it's not merely us either. Judicial Watch and EIPCA, the Election Integrity Project of California, sued Los Angeles County and won their lawsuit a year ago, February 3rd of last year, and discovered that in the voter rolls, this is a matter of public record, this is not my opinion, they were required in LA to remove 1.2 million people from their voter rolls. They were illegally in their voter rolls. You have the same problem. Exactly the same problem that they have. I've shown it in multiple places all around the country. The way I explain it to the public to make it simple is I simply point out that your voter rolls are growing faster than your population, and you can calculate about how much that is, and it's a trend, and it's because of the change in the way VoteCal registers voters. So, and interestingly, those statistics exactly match the statistics in LA, exactly match the statistics in San Joaquin, exactly match the statistics in every other county in the state. So it's not a frivolous claim, it's a statistical claim, but it's not merely a statistical claim, it's backed up by the evidence that the citizens, your own citizens, have gone out and canvassed and found. So this is going to blow up in your face unless you address it. And the right way to address it is to say, wow, we have a problem. Here's the evidence of the problem. Our citizens no longer trust our elections because of this problem. And by the way, you talk about voter suppression. That's the fastest way to suppress votes. Everybody says, the whole thing's rigged. Why would I participate anymore anyway? You got to restore faith in your elections. And as the previous gentleman said, two or three back, he was saying, look, we don't trust these black boxes anymore. Well, guess what? That's a big problem, that your own citizens don't trust you. Your own citizens don't trust Kathy Darling Allen. Your own citizens don't trust your system. That is a huge problem. Take away all the statistics. Take away all the evidence. Your citizens don't trust you anymore. So I would recommend to you, and I would advise you, to regain the trust, to restore the trust, that you make some simple changes. The first simple change is you take back control of your voter rolls. Federal law nor state law requires you to maintain a real-time database of your voters. It only requires the state to maintain that database, and you can report periodically to the state. You don't have to have a hardwire connection to them, which merely exposes you to constant manipulation. I can hack into your voter rolls from my basement in Ohio. That you should not have a system that allows that. That's preposterous. I have gone around the country and sat with 24 secretaries of states and attorneys generals around the country. I've been invited by multiple legislatures to testify before them and shown them what their own technical people in their states have confirmed, that their elections are not secure. So if you're trying to restore faith, what you need to do is you need to take actions that restore faith. The first simple action, cut the umbilical cord to the state. You don't have a live connection to the state. You just do monthly reporting. That would be a perfectly valid thing. The next thing is everything in the way that people cast their ballots and count their ballots needs to be auditable and transparent. They need to be able to check every signature that goes into the rolls or every signature of every ballot that's been accepted. Anyway, I hear my beep, so I should probably end.
I was just wondering how much longer you thought.
I think I'm close. I could give you there was a technical question I could address if you're interested about – I'll let you have the choice of giving more time whether there's a difference between an illegal ballot and a fraudulent ballot, and it's an important difference. And I'm willing to teach you about that if you're interested. It takes about 3 or 4 minutes.
Do you guys have any objection to that? Okay. All right. I would just, you were talking about your recommendations.
Yeah.
And were you done with the recommendations?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and I mean, I can give you more, but it's a complicated issue, as Urson pointed out. Our systems are very complicated. I was giving you some initial first steps, which, by the way, the Board of Commissioners last year did. The Board of Supervisors began taking those steps, which is what's created a lot of this hullabaloo. Let me just talk for a second. We're going to be investigating these cases, these cases of fraud or illegal voting. Let me give you two simple examples so you can separate the two, because when this comes to you, you're going to need to be able to deal with this. So the first one is about illegal votes. Let's say that Patty Plum over here moves to Trinity County, so she's no longer a citizen in Shasta County, but she still votes in Shasta County. That's not a fraudulent ballot. That's an illegal ballot. She's not legally allowed to vote here. That would be an illegal vote. Or let's say she moves to Colorado, and she still votes in Shasta County, even though she lives. That would be she doesn't satisfy the residency requirement. That's an illegal ballot. But let's say that she moves to Colorado, and she moves there, and she votes there like a good citizen, and somebody here notices that she's not voting here, and her ballot, because you're in California where the ballots are mailed, the ballot is sent to her old residence, and somebody casts that ballot using her name in the rolls. That's a fraudulent ballot. So a fraudulent ballot would be one cast using somebody's name, not by the actual voter. Another simple example of a fraudulent ballot would be somebody who's dead and somebody cast a ballot using their name in the rolls. That's fraud. So there are more examples, but I'm just trying to help you understand that there are two different kinds, and both of them are related to the integrity of an election. A lot of the cases that we're exploring now in your county are turning out to be illegal ballots, not fraudulent ballots, but some of them are turning out to be fraudulent ballots as well. And the distinction is important because an illegal ballot needs to be prosecuted in courts, needs to be prosecuted by your DA, et cetera. But a fraudulent ballot is a whole different range of actions. And a simple example would be if the governor said to you, we're not going to let you own guns anymore, the citizens could just say, come and take them. Because it's our constitutional right to have our guns, okay? That's a constitutional response of the citizens. They have the right to have that. Well, in the same way, if all we find is illegal voting, then I think that stays in the courts. But if we are also finding fraudulent voting, which we are, that's a constitutional issue. And that means that citizens' constitutional rights are being disenfranchised from them, and that empowers you as a county to nullify those laws. A simple example is when the governor of North New Mexico said, oh, we're going to have a temporary ban on open carry, 70 of the sheriffs in the state said, not in our county. Why can they nullify that law? because that law disenfranchises the citizens from their constitutional rights. In the same way, as we begin to prove fraud in your county, that's not merely a legal issue, that's a constitutional issue, and that empowers you to nullify any state law or any state policy, because no state law or state policy supersedes your constitutional rights. If the governor says you can't have guns anymore, you, the county, can say, not in our county, that's a constitutional right, and we interpose and we stand with our citizens and we protect the constitutional rights. So that's an important idea that's going to be coming up in your discussions. It's really two different realms of attack, legal versus fraudulent. One is in the courts of law, one is the constitutional rights of the citizens. And by the way, the citizens have a right to act upon their constitutional rights too. And so that'll be an interesting, it takes it out of the realm of the courts and into the hands of the citizens. Okay, I think that's what I wanted to explain. Do you have any other questions for me? I'm happy to help.
Thank you very much.
I'm at your disposal.
I have a few questions.
Sure.
Your mic.
Mic on. Thank you so much for returning to Shasta County, Mr. Frank.
Happy to be here.
So, with regard to the sheriff's case that you've mentioned several times, can you tell me how long ago that case was filed and what the status of it is?
I'm not the one managing that, but I'll tell you what I think it is. So it's a qualified answer.
Can you tell me who's managing that?
All I know is that I've spoken with two people in your sheriff's department, one deputy and the investigator. And I've spoken with them as recently as last month. And I know that an investigation is, there's a case number assigned to it, but I don't know the status of the investigation. How about that?
Okay.
Is that fair?
That's
what I know.
Okay, that's all I can ask of you, is what you know.
Yeah.
And then within the context of that, you had indicated that the incidences of fraud that you feel have been found when you were doing your field visits,
yes,
doing your canvassing,
yeah,
you referred to those as serious. Can you kind of tell us what is a serious fraud case versus a minor fraud case?
Well, I guess maybe the adjective is redundant. Fraud is fraud is fraud is fraud, and okay, every case of fraud disenfranchises a citizen from their constitutional rights. It would be sort of like me saying, you know, you had a serious case of murder and a casual case of murder. You know, every murder case matters.
Okay, and then one of the things that I've been learning is I've been figuring out election stuff in the last few years.
Great comment.
Is that, you know, people come up with notions that somebody's registered in an apartment and they no longer live there, those kinds of things. As you're training folks to go out and do this canvassing, is a piece of your training also to have them work with their registrar of voters? Because one of the things that I feel like folks are not understanding is that the voter roll is an iterative process that we, the people, we all need to be working on. So if your neighbor has moved and you think maybe they forgot to change, or your spouse has died or your name has changed, that's all of us. We cannot expect 2.5 people in Shasta, right, County's elections office to read everybody's minds about 180,000 people's worth of life changes.
Exactly,
so,
correct.
Okay, so that is part of your training as you're sending these folks out?
Yes, it's more than in that, and I think it answers your question directly. It's not merely, gee, we found 7 people registered at this apartment that no longer live there. There's additional steps. The question is, if it's just dirty voter rolls, that's not a fraud, that's not illegal, that just means that it's an overwhelming task for the system to try to keep the rolls clean. So I encourage them, no, we're not interested in that right now. Right now, that we're only worried about it if illegal voting took place with those voters. So that's the first thing I teach them. And then the next thing I teach them is, you don't go to Kathy Darling Allen until you have done additional investigation. Don't overwhelm their office. They're already busy, okay? You do the investigations. You carry out your civic duty. You explore. You get what's called the National Change of Address Registry, which we provide them. And we can find out where this person moved to, and they no longer live in that apartment. They live over here now. now. In fact, we'll go knock on the door at their new residence and say, by the way, are you still voting in Shasta County? And they'll say, no, we left there years ago, and we'll get an affidavit. So in other words, we do all the groundwork. Now, I'm still answering your question. What happens is then we bring that evidence to Kathy Darling Allen and say, by the way, these are the cases we're finding, and it's serious. Now, I wasn't involved in the early release to the sheriff. I wouldn't have encouraged that until we'd already gone through Kathy. So I think that's related to your question. I would have encouraged us to go run by here because I've learned all around the country that a lot of times we think we found fraud, we think we found illegal votes, but they turn out to not be, and the clerk knows what's going on with that situation. And so we don't want to waste anybody's time. So I'm kind of answering the question. I understand it's a little long, but it's not a simple answer. There's a lot of steps in there, and I encourage them to be rational and responsible, and nothing goes public. Nothing goes public, I tell them, until it's gone through someone of my experience's eyes, because I catch, you know, they'll think they have fraud, and even I can catch that that's not fraud. Even I can catch that's not illegal. So I do my own filtering as well.
Okay, I'm really, really glad to hear you say that because I feel like we do have some disconnect in this community. We have had people come to Board of Supervisors meetings, have come to our meetings, claiming pieces of fraud, and it's my understanding that they are not taking these to the registrar of voters to have anything clarified, and that's just creating hard feelings.
I agree, and I fully acknowledge there's a lot of hard feelings between the people in Kathy Darling Allen. I mean, why do you think she built a fence around her building? I mean, I just came from a county in Georgia, and the day I arrived, the county clerk requested police protection around the building the whole day I'm there. I'm a nice guy. You heard that even somebody who disagrees with me says I'm a nice guy. I don't mean any physical harm to anybody. However, I definitely think it's important that we hold our officials accountable. And if our officials are using systems which are disenfranchising us from our constitutional rights, then we're going to use our constitutional rights to take them to task. And that's an important principle.
Yeah. Okay. I just have a couple more things.
Good questions.
So the 1.2 million fraudulent voters in Los Angeles.
I didn't say that. It's 1.2 million illegal. They were illegally in the rolls, and that was ruled in court.
Okay. Can you tell me roughly, I'm not expecting an exact number, roughly how many voters there are, registered voters there are in Los Angeles County?
About 5.4, 5.5 million. So it's about 1 in 4, 1 in 3 to 1 in 4, in between that.
Okay.
That's a lot.
And I will agree with you on that. That is a lot.
Yeah.
But one thing I would like to point out is that the 300 to 400, even if you use the 400 number for Shasta County, we have 112,000 voters. That works out to 0.3% of all the registered voters. So
I'm looking at the numbers now. You have 22,000 more people in your voter rolls than is justified by your population growth, and that's about 1 in 5. And when we look at your rolls, we find 1 in 5 at least, more like 1 in 4, the voters in your rolls do not belong there.
Can you forward that data to us specifically?
I
would like to see that.
Yeah, it's in my graphs, and I apologize. I thought I was going to be able to put this up on the screen, and I could show you. I'll send my slides to you afterwards as well. And awesome. I sent some of this in advance, so I think you do have some of those graphs. Yeah.
Okay.
You do have some of it, not all of it. I think I answered your question.
Okay.
But notice this is important. I'm a scientist, so controls matter to me, and experimental method matters to me. When I show statistics like that, that is, in science we have a rule, and it's if you can predict what's happening, you probably understand what's going on. If something happens you didn't predict, you're going to learn something. Well, what happens is I go around and I predict. I look at the rolls and I say, it looks like it's going to be between somewhere like 1 in 4 or 1 in 3 of the people in your rolls don't belong there. And then when we go knocking on doors, we find that exact situation. So, and we have done that process here. We are finding exactly matching this numbers. And by the way, it's the same exact pattern in every other county in the state of California, which is why the title of my section was Proving Central Control in the State, because it's the same in every county. It's the same exact problem in every county. Go ahead.
Okay, final question. Can you confirm, can you tell me what law it is that you believe makes us not require a live connection to the state? Because both NVRA and HAVA do require those live links.
No, that's not correct. I've read HAVA myself. I read NVRA myself. They require the states to keep a central database, not a live central database. And one of the ways you know that's true is, if you remember when HAVA was in 2002, is I've worked with several legislatures across the country, for example, Wisconsin, and for years, for over a decade, they never had a live connection. They merely, their county clerks merely reported monthly what the roles were. They did not have a live connection. Multiple states, at least half of them that I've been in, reported that way after HAVA for many years. So I'm not merely making a legal argument. I'm showing you that in practice, that is the way it was carried out throughout the country. Now, that's the federal law. Your state might have a different law. But like I said, if the state law disenfranchises you from your constitutional rights, you have every right to nullify it. You have every right to not comply with it. And since I can prove, and your people are proving in your county, that because of this system, there is fraudulent and illegal activity going on, you have every standing as a county commission, as a county board, to say, we're not going to comply with this law because it's disenfranchising us from our constitutional rights. And then you would still be in compliance with the federal law.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Do you have any questions?
I'm happy to be here, by the way. You can call me anytime. I'm free.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I might have missed it when you were comparing the voter rolls growth with the population.
Yeah.
Where are you receiving the data on the population from? Where are you gathering that?
So what I typically do when I go to a county is I prepare ahead of time. I go to the U.S. Census website, census.gov, and I download all the data and about a county. And then that includes demographics, you know, how many people of every age and whatnot. And then I'll go to the Federal Reserve. They also keep a lot of data, and I download those. And then I'll go to the county records themselves, because counties have a pretty good idea what their population is. They keep pretty good tax records and residency records, and I compare the and in your case, it's within about 1%. The numbers I got from census.gov are really close to what your county says, and you would never expect them to exactly agree, because somebody moves out today, how does the U.S. census.gov know? But your county knows. So as long as they're close, and that means the trends are good. And you notice what I said. I didn't say that you had 22,000 more people than your population. I said than your trend. So I look at the shape of the trend, and if your population is going, actually your population here has been pretty flat since about 2008, pretty flat. I'm looking at your trend right now, yet your rolls have been growing steadily since then. And so, wait a minute, how come your rolls are growing when your population isn't? That's suspicious. It's easy to explain how that happens. What it means is that you're not keeping up with the cleaning as fast as you are doing the adding. And so it grows faster than the population. And also it's a policy change, especially since 2016. I'm looking at the graph right now. After 2016 especially, it shot up. Why? Because it went centralized and you began adding people through the DMV and social services as well. And so that increases the rate. So anything that increases the rate, if you don't also increase the rate of cleaning, guess what? You end up with the population growing faster than the rolls growing faster than the population. And it's apparent in the graph. You can see that. It's this one. Whatever one is in your list, I got okay. A little 22,000 labeled there.
I have a follow-up question on that. The county records, this is new to me, where we get this information from. So can you tell me specifically which county offices that you go to for those records?
Oh, I'll go to Shasta County. You've got a website, and it'll tell you what the population is here, you know, like the tax records kind of thing. You know, and a lot of places have these, you know, like if you're going to buy a house, and they'll say, hey, move to Shasta County, you know, our population is X, you know, and all those numbers kind of agree with one another.
Okay.
They're within a percent or two of each other. Is that fair? There's one more thing. I didn't give you one other source. On my graph, I show the population, and we just discussed that. That's what you asked about. Mm-hmm. Where do I get the registration data? That's right from the Secretary of State website.
No, I was just wondering about the population.
Okay, data. Gotcha. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
If you have a follow-up on that one, go ahead.
So do you believe have you incorporated in any way information about voter trends, about things changes in technology for how people campaign? Do you simply not believe that none of those things have actually contributed to the rise in the number of registered voters?
Of course not. Of course they would be. They would affect. And the young lady who was here earlier spoke about me being a nice guy. I am. She even said, gee, 2008, we would have expected more people to sign up to vote because, people liked Obama. And in 2016 and 2020, a lot of people, we call them rednecks, came out of the woodwork because they loved Trump. And so all those things naturally increased the rolls. But let me point out that I'm not just merely comparing the trends. We then go check the rolls and look, and sure enough, the numbers match. There's a natural increase in voter interest. That's normal, but they're also confirmable. This is not a speculative, merely statistical argument, if that makes sense. By the way, earlier someone in the thing mentioned that, we only complain when we lose. Well, who complained from 2016 and to 2018 about the elections not having security? It was the Hillary Clinton campaign. In fact, she brought federal testimony for years talking about how insecure our elections were. So our situation is this way. If the Democrats lose, they're going to complain for 4 years. And then the Republicans lose, they're going to complain for 4 years. This is stupid. Let's have a good system where nobody has to complain, where everything's transparent and we can verify everything. Right now, your elections are not transparent. So any citizen who has concern has no way to resolve their concern. And all that does is increase their mistrust of you as leaders in the community. I think you need the elections more transparent and more under local control so that every citizen can verify every aspect of their election. I love what Urson Russell heard. I heard him speak the other day. He said, the best election system is the system where you don't have to trust anything.
Okay, did you have any more questions?
Okay. Short answer question here.
Okay. Short answers are tough for me, you've noticed.
That's why I prefaced that. So I remember reading the news with the court case where LA had to remove the 1.2 million people. But you said it was a judicial watch, and I didn't catch the acronym for the other.
Election Integrity Project of California, EIPCA. They also have a lawsuit under the Supreme Court right now that's important. And there I am answering too long. Sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. And another possible short answer question.
I'm trying.
You delineated illegal votes, fraudulent votes.
Yes.
And said fraudulent votes are disenfranchising voters, therefore it's a constitutional issue.
Yes.
Aren't constitutional issues also solved in the courts?
Yes and no. So, for example, in New Mexico, when the governor said, oh my goodness, we've had another school shooting, we are going to have a temporary ban on open carry. The sheriffs first interposition is the technical term, and the sheriff said, we're not going to comply with this law. The citizens then, about 50 of them or so, put their 45s on their belt and went up to the Capitol steps and made a public demonstration. So there's an idea. There are a couple of ideas there. The first idea was interposition, and that's where the sheriffs interpose between the citizens and the government. That's the first idea. The second idea is noncompliance. The citizens refuse to comply with the unconstitutional law, and notice that that's not in a court. And thirdly, they nullified the law. They said, come and take it. And they walked right up to the steps and showed their guns. So that is the act of the people. That is them exerting their constitutional rights. And I would say, I'm not saying it's not also, could not also be prosecuted in the courts. But if I was walking down the street in lovely Shasta County and some lady was being accosted in the alleyway, let's say, her constitutional rights are being violated. Me, as a citizen, I have the constitutional right to intervene, to try to protect and try to interpose and protect that victim, right? But it's not merely my right to interpose. It's my obligation. It's my civic duty. It's not sufficient for me to say, oh, okay, well, I'll call 911, have a good day. No, I also need to intervene. And in the same way, and that's why I brought that up, because the citizens, once they're aware that fraud is taking place in their elections, once they're aware that their constitutional rights are being violated, they are constitutionally, they have the right to interpose, they have the right to nullify, but not merely the right, they have the obligation to do so. So it becomes a citizen movement by constitutional grounds. And that's why I made that distinction. And that's why the citizen movement in your county is so important, because they recognize the importance of their constitutional responsibility to address the issue.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Beth, my turn.
Yep. Okay. Now, as far as the canvassing, and the percentage that Suzanne said was very small because of 400. Do you know if they canvassed on every single house in Shasta County? That's the only way that percentage would be accurate.
So that's a great question. Thank you for that. So in statistics, if you want to do an extrapolation, that's called, then you would do a random sampling of your county and then extrapolate that to the whole county. Some of the canvassing we've done is not random. Some of it is targeted. So the canvassing is a different question than the statistical analysis of the rolls. The canvassing, the purpose of the canvass was for us to identify actual cases of fraud and actual illegal voting, and then to bring that to light. It'd be sort of like if we're looking for the murder rate went up in town, we aren't just checking every house for murder. We're going to where the likely suspects are. So the canvassing was targeted. However, that doesn't prevent me from doing all kinds of lovely statistics on your rolls, which I have done. And there's a thing called the NCOA, the National Change of Address Registry, which shows you how many people have left your county and where they now live. And when we run the NCOA against your rolls, guess what? We predict exactly what we see. It's not merely statistics. It's confirmed by an outside statistical method.
I have a question.
Wait, can we just let Bev finish?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Bev, do you have any other questions?
My next question or statement is, okay, fraudulent vote disenfranchises someone's vote.
Yes.
Okay, but doesn't an illegal vote also do that? Because their vote is being canceled by something that...
I don't disagree, but that's a tougher argument to make, because one is kind of a procedural thing, and there's no intent... necessarily to I might accidentally disenfranchise you from your constitutional rights. That's different than deliberately disenfranchising you from your... That's a different kind of argument. So the legal arguments tend to be more procedural and systemic. You know, what's wrong with this system? I don't think anybody, you know, when somebody dies in a traffic accident, we don't say, well, it's Bev's fault, you know. No, it's a system. We need a better stoplight. We need a better system there. And even though that person's constitutional rights are disenfranchised from them, that's really more of a systemic thing than it is a particular constitutional thing. Does that make sense? I'm not saying it doesn't. An illegal vote can certainly disenfranchise somebody from their constitutional rights, but it's a different process, if that kind of makes sense.
Right, but... You know? Bottom line result is still my vote.
Bottom line, your vote didn't count, yes.
Okay.
And that's why we don't ignore the illegal votes. We are finding them. They're important, and they expose the problems in your system and why you need to disconnect yourself from the state and control your own rules. You know, I have met Kathy Darling, I don't remember, but I trust her more than I trust the state. And maybe some of my fans out here aren't going to like me to say that. But I trust her more than I trust some distant remote control system. She knows the citizens in your county. She knows if, you know, somebody applies for an absentee ballot and she's like, that looks suspicious. You know, she's going to look into that. Whereas how can someone in Sacramento possibly have the local knowledge to make that kind of call? So I trust the local officials more, which is why I'm urging you to take local control of your elections. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for that comment.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Okay. And have you, I don't know, did you say you did vote, did meet with the sheriff, or you have not?
I didn't meet with the sheriff himself. I've met with one of the deputies and an investigator.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beth, can you speak a little bit more into the mic?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
He's there and my mic's
here. And multiple times, by the way, because I've been coming here over a year, and several times I've met with them. And and my purpose in doing that is exactly what Commissioner – I have the wrong glasses on. Barrymore, excuse me, was alluding to. I don't like the citizens to do something outside of the participation of the leaders in the county. I want the sheriff's office to know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and the importance of it. It actually increases the credibility of the movement when the sheriff looks at that and goes, wow, that is probable cause. I'm assigning a case number. So why would we want to exclude him or his office from that process?
Right. And so do you still think there is a lot more fraud out there, maybe just a little bit more fraud out there?
So I've done all around the country, right? And I've looked at 48 states and over 3,000 counties and multiple states where the legislatures invited me in and gave me access to a lot more information than I have here. And in some of those cases, we've exposed massive amounts of fraud. And what do I mean by massive? I'm talking like 1 in 5 of the ballots were not from who you think they're from. That's serious fraud, okay? And that's not me hypothesizing that. That's me presenting all the evidence and it being acknowledged to be true by the legislature in writing, in court, in formal proceedings. So I see that. So what happens is when I see the fraud and we've got it all justified, then what do I do as a scientist? I notice the math. I notice the patterns. I know how to find it. Because of that. Then I go into other states and I use the same math and statistics and go, wow, I see the same phenomenon here. I see it here. I see it here. Let's go check that out. And guess what? When we do, we find it. So I haven't done, or we haven't done a full canvas of your county. We've done a targeted canvas so far. But I'm fairly confident at this point that we're going to, the fact that you've already got the 400 you've got, and that was just an initial time. I think you have a serious issue here. And I should have predicted that anyway, because you have a serious issue in California and every other county, and your data look just like every other county. So I have reason to suspect. So at the minimum, let's say I'm completely wrong. Great, I'm completely wrong, and I'll admit it. But so far, everything I've predicted, we've been finding exactly where we expect to find it. So that's, you have probable cause, and your citizens have reason to suspect and reason to question your election integrity, and so I applaud what they're doing. And let's say we do a full investigation and we find nothing, that's good. That means your citizens will trust you again, but you need to do the full investigation.
Right.
Yeah.
And I had another question, but kind of...
Sorry, I talked too long and you lose your train of thought, I know.
Okay, so 400... illegal or fraudulent votes.
Yes.
Is that enough to make a difference on an election race?
So if I said, well, we had 2 extra murders last year in Shasta County, and is that enough to make a difference to your population? Nah, so let's not worry about it. So, no, I don't think that's a good argument. And the argument I would say is, if we let's say we bring 100 cases of fraudulent ballots to you guys, and you were to say, well, it's only 100 cases of fraud, it's not enough to change any of the election outcomes, I would say to you, okay, well, that means that you and 99 other county officials have to give up your ballots because that's what you're asking us to do. We're being disenfranchised from our constitutional rights for every one of those fraudulent ballots. It's not okay that there's even one, you know, but there's always going to be somebody who cheats. And I'm not saying that switching the system to all paper stops all fraud. I'm not that naive, okay? We've had fraud as long as there's been elections. But by returning to local control, you can stop widespread fraud. You can stop me from my basement hacking into your election and manipulating your outcomes. You can control it locally. So I would say that the argument about, well, it's not enough, is moot. We should not tolerate one murder.
Right.
And we should not tolerate one fraudulent vote either.
Right. And, but... You know, people do say there will always be fraud.
There always
so
will be.
So does that mean we don't try?
Well, we should try. You're right. And that's why what the citizens are doing here is so important. You know, there's a principle here. In the old days, we used to vote in person together. And who ran the elections? the citizens. And so when a person would come into the polls to vote, the citizens would say, yeah, that's a real person. I know Johnny, lives seven doors down. And we policed our own elections. Does that mean there wasn't fraud? Of course there was fraud. But there was a paper trail, and we could prosecute it. The problem now is the citizens have been taken so much out of the process. If you ask Kathy Darling Allen who's responsible for cleaning your voter rolls, she'll probably say it's not really our fault if they're dirty. Blame the state. And if you ask the state who's responsible, they're going to say blame the county. The problem is the citizens used to do that role, and there's really no way for the system to do that. You need local citizen involvement.
I believe we were told it's our fault.
Whose fault? Oh, the people. Well, that's sort of true. I mean, it's your constitutional, it's your duty as a citizen.
Our duty.
When you move from Shasta to Colorado, it's your duty to contact your county clerk and tell her, hey, I moved, take me off the rolls. It's your duty to do that. Now, what I've learned, though, around the country, and I've got hundreds of examples of this, is citizens, even when they do that, nothing happens. I can give you many examples where citizens like your group have gone out and cleaned the voter rolls. They found all these people that don't belong in there, and they turn in those lists, and sometimes the state will remove them from the rolls, but then 6 months later, they're right back in again. Okay. In other words, why can that happen? Mm-hmm. Because the state's in control, not the citizens.
Right.
We need the citizens to be in control of our own elections.
So in the 2020 election, I believe, is where most of the 400 is found. So with all the data you've looked at, do you think there's a good chance, or at least a chance, that those same fraudulent or illegal votes also voted in elections since then?
What a great question. As I've studied these all around the country, there was a lot of activity in 2021 in counties all around the country, and they found fraudulent votes. And to my utter shock, even when that became public that they were fraudulent votes, those voters voted again in 2022. I mean, you would think if you expose fraud that somebody, whoever's doing the fraud, wouldn't do the same thing again, but they did. It's kind of shocking to me. Let me comment about that a little. In 2022, the turnout's way lower than in 2020. And so it's actually easier to cheat in the midterm election than it is in the national election, the federal election, because the margins are smaller. And so it only takes a small amount of cheating to tip the balance one way or another. So those off-election years, those midterm years, are actually, there's actually a lot of fraud in those that we've found. But it tends to be harder to find. Because like in 2020, you mentioned almost all your cases are from there. There's so much in there, it makes it easy to find as an absolute number. Right. And in the midterm, there's absolute numbers lower. So even though the percentage might still be there, it's just harder to find. And they don't stick out as much.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay. I think that's all my questions.
Okay, good.
Thank
happy
you
to help.
Very much.
Yeah. Questions.
Yeah.
Don's first.
Hi.
Thank you for coming.
Ms. Duckett, yes.
So I just want some clarification with the idea of nullification,
yeah,
as you described it.
Yeah.
And I just wanted you to clarify for me and maybe the audience that in order for the nullification to occur, fraud would have to first be proven. Is that correct?
I think it's more credible of a claim. Yes.
Are you suggesting that citizens nullify and go against state law without any proof of fraud?
I suppose I wouldn't recommend it. It doesn't have the same credible impact. It's sort of like if the governor didn't ever say, we're going to take away your guns, it would be silly for the people to be standing on the steps of the Capitol building with their guns, right? It doesn't really mean anything. So, yes.
And on the 450 that we've been discussing today, have you personally seen those rolls?
I have.
And what's your estimate about the percentage of fraud in those 450?
I'm guessing two-thirds of it's illegal and a third of it's fraud.
Okay. Thank you.
Just ballpark. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for everything that you've brought forward today.
You're welcome.
I would be interested if you have a card. I would like to continue some discussions. I have a lot more questions that I don't want to bore some folks with here.
I'm delighted to help.
And then also, I would be remiss without saying, I know that you've had a lot of experiences in a lot of states with a lot of registrars of voters.
Yep. But
I can assure you that our registrar of voters and our registrar staff do not blame the state for the condition of the voter rolls. We have 2.5 FTEs who work in this office, mm-hmm. who use a multitude of checks and balances mm-hmm. to get it right. It's just a big job because we have become infinitely more mobile as a society. More people have two homes. Which one do you register at? All these kinds
Valid.
Of things. There's a lot that goes into that. So I just want to make sure that it's pointed out that our, as you said earlier, our local election staff is the best place for fixes and for getting the job done. I think part of this is just understanding the magnitude of what the job is and understanding all of the checks and balances that already exist. So that's all I have to say.
I agree. And I think that, you know, I don't, as I travel the country, when I meet with folks like your election officials, I start out the meeting by telling them right to their face, you are not my target. I trust you more than the state. My target is the state system meddling in your elections. I want you solely in control of your elections because I trust you more than the state. I always start my discussions that way.
One of the things that I want to send you is a link to our last meeting where we learned a lot about the state system and how our county interfaces with it and who has access to what and how things are used. And one of the things is you mentioned NCOA.
Yeah.
We have in our registrar's office, we have monthly they interface with that.
Yeah.
And they use that as well as motor voter and census data and all the other things. And that's kind of the point is to use as many sources as you can to find all these people because clearly
100%.
Not everyone is reporting. And final thing is
yeah, sure.
I do not want anybody leaving this building thinking that I'm okay with any voter fraud either. We just need to be logical about how we address it. That's all.
Fair enough.
I lost my train of thought. Sorry.
I could tell she was getting ready to say something.
Sorry.
You know, I travel the country, and maybe while I talk, you'll think. And maybe I'm not supposed to talk. You're going to tell me to shut up. Okay. I respect you.
No.
She remembered. See, we just had to ramble till she remembered. There we go.
Did you remember?
Yes, I did.
So in your presentation, you said that we need to make our elections in this county or, you know, across the nation transparent.
Yeah.
So number one action item to do that. Let's have it.
Number one action item is there's a paper trail for everything. So if you have, that's examinable by the public. So for example, if you have ballots coming in by mail or ballots coming in and you're going to an all-mail state, every one of those envelopes needs to be publicly inspectable. You need to be able to say, that doesn't look like the right signature. The citizens need to be able to verify the checking in process. The citizens need to be able to verify the mailing out process. I can show you county after county where those two things don't reconcile. Let me give you one quick example and you understand why this is important. I have in the state of California, I have photographs of ballots, not registration, not requests for absentee ballots, actual ballots being mailed to citizens in your state from other states. These are not being mailed to them from Kathy Darling Allen. They're being mailed from other states. Now, what happens is those ballots are flooding into your system. How do we know where they're going? And that's a huge problem because then when those ballots are coming in, how do you know they're from who you mailed them to? You don't know. So it's super important that you have a chain of custody, they call that, on that. And so everything about that chain of custody should be transparent and auditable. That is probably the number one most important issue in your elections in California, even more important than the rolls. Because the rolls can be dirty, but if you have a chain of custody on every ballot, you know John Smith received that ballot. You know John Smith filled it out. You know John Smith sent it in. You know John Smith was checked in. Boom, you know that was a process with integrity. Well, right now, your citizens do not have access to nearly any of that, and that's a problem. So it's not transparent.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Did you have something?
Sure, Chair Lund. I was just going to recommend that at the conclusion of the discussion by the commission that maybe we take a five-minute recess,
okay.
But it's at your discretion.
Any other questions from the commission?
Honor to be with you today. Thank you for having me.
Before public comment? Okay. I think that's it for questions for you. Thank you so much.
Delighted.
And I would like to say that we tried to get Dr. Grimmer, who has a differing viewpoint from Dr. Frank, to come today, but he wasn't able to make it.
Your mic's off.
Oh, my God. Okay.
You were talking about Dr. Grimmer that he didn't show today, yes.
Okay. We tried to get Dr. Grimmer, who has differing viewpoints from Dr. Frank, to come today so they could both present and they could both rebuttal and we could talk about it all at the same time.
Yeah.
But we weren't able to make that happen. So possibly sometime in the future, if we can ever get Grimmer to come and Dr. Frank to come back, we will try to do that. So
I'd be delighted.
I just wanted to let everybody know that.
Yeah.
Okay. And with that, we're going to take a five-minute recess. Okay. Okay, we're going to reconvene the meeting of the Shasta County Election Commission at 3:20. Okay, we've got public comment on R1, starting with Christian. Christian? You're up. R1, public comment. Yeah, comments, not questions. Thank you.
So, why is Dr. Frank here? Oh. Why is Dr. Frank here? And I'm going to quote Mr. Frank himself. I go around starting little fires everywhere. And then I come back and I throw gasoline on those fires. Kind of sounds like an arsonist against democracy. Frank is also a coach for a few county supervisors and a few of you. Here today, proliferating big lies for the commission's agenda, which is blowing up the foundation of America, fidelity and the faith of our vote. Again, quoting Frank, I'm an arms dealer. I'm coaching you. I'm helping you. I'm happy to fight alongside. Okay, does that sound patriotic? Nope. Frank also says he's coached convicted criminal Tina Peters, now facing 10 more election-related felonies and misdemeanors going to court next week in Mesa County. And Peters proudly admits turning over data, voter data, just like you three want to do with your January 08 R4 vote, to fellow election conspiracy, I call them terrorists. There has been no substantiated voter fraud in Shasta County, none, nada. Yet, like Mr. Pello, Frank will tell you he's proven it. The election was rigged. Hey, it was rigged for both Supervisor Jones and for Trump. Yet, all Trump's 62 fraud cases were thrown out by both Republican and Democratic courts, and a judge in Oregon ruled Mr. Frank's testimony was not fit for the court. Quoting Trump, lifelong appointed Republican.
Christian.
Yep.
Can you keep it to something that was within the jurisdiction of this commission, which
I don't know if Dr. Frank is in this jurisdiction of your commission or not. I'd have to ask him.
I'm just trying to follow you, what you would like to have done.
Yeah. I would like to have a few more minutes.
That's fine. That's fine. Go ahead.
Here's Dr. Frank is obviously a very nice guy. Very, very nice guy. But when he's what I don't want you to do is advocate to his following out here that it's okay to break laws if you feel they're unconstitutional. That's anarchy and chaos. We can't have that. What I would encourage him to do is to work closely with Kathy Darling Allen and figure out what is happening and what can be done about it. Because this is feeding a fire that's spreading across this country based on you need to distrust your government. You need to distrust your election officials. Okay. And this is what he's doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm trying to refrain from having back and forth with public commenters, but I just want to clarify, this commission will not be taking any actions other than recommendations to the Board of Supervisors.
Well, and I just, certainly...
No back and forth.
I love it.
I just want to keep...
As long as it's legal.
Thank you. Okay, public comment. Ersan Russell?
Hello again, board members. How are you? I'm usually much more calm like this, you know, but there are just certain things that happen at some of these meetings, and I get a little fired up. Ms. Barrymore, I would love to get your card and have a chance to speak with you more, so I'll come up and see you afterwards. I know this is kind of on what Dr. Frank said, so just a couple of comments. Number one, we're not in democracy. We're a constitutional republic. Number two, Tina Peters, it was mentioned, if someone wants to see that, go and look up her video and movie. You can see it for your own accord and make up your own mind. Working with ROVs, Ms. Barrymore, we encourage that as Patriot Force California. We work with about 24 counties right now throughout the state. It represents about 88% of the voting population of the state. We absolutely encourage people to go work with their elected officials. I have never met with Kathy Darling Allen, so I don't know her, and I don't have any... positioning on where she stands on things. What I can tell you is what we see around with multiple ROVs. And let's say a situation like someone that shows 173 years old. Now, we know that's because they have an 1850 birth date in the records and those things. We know that, and so do the ROVs. What some of them tell us, and I'm not saying Kathy Darling does, is that we can't discriminate on age. We're asking for common sense. The oldest person in California is 114 years old. That's not a discrimination on age. That's common sense, and let's look into this and send a card out and just verify and try and have accurate, correct records. Those are simple things that we ask for, and again, I don't know how Kathy Darling Allen would respond to some of those things. Registered at P.O. boxes, UPS stores, commercial addresses, those would fall into your illegal votes, right? It's an illegal registration. Now, for a domicile, you can have a P.O. box as a mail-to address or UPS store as a mail-to address or commercial property or out-of-state. But the law says your domicile has to be where you sleep, where your primary residence is. And nobody can sleep in a P.O. box or UPS store. That's why we have those laws, so that we can go and locate those individuals, either the county or citizen activists that want to make sure that we have transparency and accountability in our elections. Illegal versus fraud. Fraud is so simple. It's ID theft. It's like somebody died and the ballot was cast for that person. Somebody moved out of state and somehow that ballot was acquired and voted for that person that didn't actually transact that action. That's it. That's as far as fraud goes. That's ID theft. 30 seconds left. We want nothing left to trust. Because then we don't have to trust Dr. Frank coming in here. We don't have to trust Kathy or the Secretary of State. We get to all trust each other because we're all involved in operating our systems and our elections. How many organizations have access to our statewide voter rolls? There's 9 of them that can inject voters into our statewide voter rolls through the API. And there's many, many other things I would love to say about NCOA, but my time is out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, I do.
Jenny?
Thank you. Hello again. I hope this isn't seen as critical, but rather than asking questions after hearing him speak. My first question was on the paper trail. He was talking about citizens being responsible for ballots, but I do believe that in 1965, we specifically made the right to a private or secret ballot because we don't want people to be coerced or to be intimidated out of their vote. So I think that's why citizens don't get to see those ballots. My second one is, I think I heard people talking about the Mesa pattern, and while I do believe that everything that Laura Hobbs found is correct, that she discovered these things, my understanding, and I can be corrected because I'm not an expert on the CRV, readings of how to tell your ballots and where they came from. So I can definitely be corrected on this. But my understanding is that there are numbers on each of your ballots, like little markings that say, this is the order these ballots were shipped out, this is where they went. But they're not necessarily counted in that same order, and so it creates sort of a weird like trend. And so that's what they were seeing when looking at these Mesa patterns. But it doesn't necessarily mean fraud. It just means that the ballots were counted in a different order than they were received. I am a little disappointed in hearing people talk about sowing trust in our elections when I feel mistrust was sown in the way that the elections were talked about. Like, in order to trust our ROV, we would have to sow that trust again. Having people yell at her when she's up here or talk about how she's not doing her job properly, that's going to sow mistrust. And no matter what you do after that, the citizens will not trust her. I heard a comment about that we're a constitution republic, but technically in California, because we have initiatives and propositions that we both as citizens bring up and vote on, we're also a democracy in California. I think that's it. So thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Anybody else for public comment on R1? Okay. No, just get over here in line if you don't mind.
Thank you. Laura Hobbs, district candidate for Supervisor District 2. I would like to talk about the cast vote record and specifically how that record is analyzed. What happens is it's completely random. We don't use the barcoding that Jenny was speaking of. And the beauty of it is the reason why we're able to do this analysis is because everybody receives their mail-in ballot at a different time. Everybody fills it out at a different time. Everybody mails it in, puts it in their mailbox at a different time. The mailman delivers it to the ROV's office at a different time. These are completely randomized data, so you shouldn't expect a pattern. There should be no pattern whatsoever. You should see a little variation in the beginning, and it should settle into a flat line. That's exactly opposite of what we see. We see it starts very low, which is an indication of fraud, of front-loading of votes for the favored candidate, which gradually rises up to the very end point. And the cast vote record is a record of how the election took place from beginning to end. So I just wanted to clarify that for folks in the audience. It's an auditing document that is produced by the machines themselves. So Dominion, Hart Intercivic, they all produce the cast vote record. And I just wanted to say, we can restore trust by making everything transparent, making sure that we have paper ballots counted at the precinct, hand counted, and using paper poll books. Those three items. If you guys are able to as a commission, I would recommend that you place those three items that I mentioned. Just make it simple. Those three items, hand counting, at the precincts with paper poll books. Those are the three things. And you would instantly restore the trust and the faith in our election system. Thank you.
1 second, Laura, please.
I have a question / response. So you were saying again that your data analysis relies on the CVR being randomized and that the receipt and the return of the ballots is randomized. But after recently looking at the CVR data for one of the elections in our county, I noticed that the CVR data is not randomized. It's organized by precincts.
The delivery of the ballot is randomized. So it's the way that it comes into the office. It's not the ballot. Has nothing to do with the scanning of the ballot.
Would be the processing of the ballot. So if the ballot comes in and is processed, right? So they process the ballots before the election day, but they don't run the ballots until election day. When I observed, I saw the Agilis machine. Yeah. It was sorting the ballots into precincts. And so even though it's received randomly and begun to be processed in that random order, it's then sorted into districts. And so then when it's actually run into the machines, it's no longer randomized.
You would think that because of the sorting that the Agilis does, that we would lose that ability to see what's happened. But you can look at the data itself and actually see the sorting. And it still shows the same MESA pattern of fraud, despite the pre-sorting. So pre-sorting is actually illegal in some states because you lose the authenticity of the vote, of the ballot, as it was delivered. You can lose that record. But we do pre-sort. I think that's something that we should consider, but it's not, one of my highest priorities, but getting rid of the Agilis would be another good idea.
So, sorry, just for clarification, because on the bottom of your graph, it said that the data was randomized. So is your graph dependent on it being randomized? And are you saying when it's sorted into precincts, it's still randomized?
Yeah, it's still randomized. And the reason it's not dependent, so that I don't actually randomize the data. I don't do anything to cause the randomization. The randomization occurs when people randomly fill in their ballots. So if you think about it, like, it starts out high for the Dem.
Can I interrupt you?
Sorry.
Yeah, because we have a committee that's working on data, Suzanne and Lisa, and theoretically they were going to get with you and talk with you about this.
Right,
so can I just
leave
it at that?
I've been waiting to hear back from them, so I just want to let everybody know that there's nothing that's happened with that. I was looking forward to working with them and kind of maybe we could explain some of these things and go over them.
All right, and Ms. Hobbs, can you please refrain from mentioning that you are running for supervisor at the podium at this meeting? Because apparently I am tasked through law to enforce that, and if you insist on doing that, you're not going to be able to give your public comment, and I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
But I do have my constitutional rights, so I understand the pressure that you're under.
I have to look.
But I also have the pressure to do what is within my rights. If people don't assert their rights, we lose their rights.
I'm just warning.
So we have to protect our constitutional rights.
I'm just asking you that I might be forced to have to ask you to leave.
Yeah, but you also might have to face a lawsuit for obstructing my First Amendment rights.
Okay, and so I'll look into
consider that too.
I will. I'll look into what my responsibilities are. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the opportunity for the public to make a comment before the commission is under the Brown Act, as this is a limited public forum. And also, as previously noted, state law does prohibit the use of public resources for campaigning. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Hi, it's Nettie again. So one of the young lady mentioned about trust. And also Dr. Frank had mentioned having a traceable way. So I remember why I would go into the garages of people. They've had a hard copy. I showed my ID. It was clear who we were. We knew our neighbors, and we would say, like, oh, that person doesn't live anymore. So there was actually local knowledge, because eventually at some point you would know at least one or two blocks or, you would be familiar with your community. So what started my journey was when a number of my friends, probably over the last two elections, would say that they would go and vote, and they said they voted already, and yet they didn't vote. They were each one had a different measure of trying to get an answer. None of it was consistent. You can comment it toward training of the employee, either employees or volunteers at the ROV or at the vote centers. I had no idea. So when I asked more questions about it, I'm like, okay, well, what do they do? Each, you know, some just said, well, you know, you already voted. They were basically walled off. They couldn't vote anymore. Another one then was given a, you know, a provisional but couldn't guarantee that her vote would be counted. And just series of common threads would happen that way. That was a grave concern for me because that's one of the founding foundations of it is that we, as a constitutional right, we are the one that actually are responsible to maintain that freedom and the freedom to actually our vote is casted to the person that we voted for. So it, and in that process, there was no way to backtrack. Finally, we got someone who actually said, you can call this hotline. We did. There was no callback. There was no follow-through. There was nothing. It was one person, if it's even accurate, at the ROV at, in Southern California that was the deciding factor to see. Actually, he later said that at this recent election said that, oh, those would probably be counted too. So either way it gets canceled, right, if they're opposing or there's extra votes going toward that person. The other issue was that so that was just one answer, but there were tons that none of them could ever get a straight answer from them. So it should be clear, but it's not. So that's what we're asking is for transparency on both sides. And another thing that you should know, too, they were saying there's a judge race where there are two Democrats. They're going after each other right now because of fraud or illegal votes that were placed, I believe, in Michigan. I can't remember the state. I can submit that after the fact. But also, too, is that's pretty much it. I just want to let you know that that's what caused my interest in this journey to find out the truth about that. So thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else for public comment?
So, Chair, I'd like you to ask the attorney to bring back the definition of campaign at the next meeting, please, because everybody's making an assumption that Laura was actually campaigning. So we need the definition of that, please. Also, the intent. Is her intent to campaign or is her intent to actually just show a source where information can be found?
Mr. Gallardo?
Yep.
Yeah, we're on R1.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So well, that's fine.
Do you have any public comments on R1?
I do. As far as ballots being public, Florida makes the ballots a public document after the elections. It's in their state code because it's a secret ballot. You look at the ballot, you can't tell who voted. So we absolutely can do that here. As far as Ms. Barrymore said something about the registrar's employees not blaming the state for something or they don't blame the state, I don't know. I've had many conversations with Joanna and Kathy Allen, and there's nothing darling about her, is when I tell them how the state laws and procedures and processes encourage the fraud, guess what their answer is? I have to follow the state laws. That's their answer. So that's blaming the state. Thank you very much. As far as trusting our local office, what's with the 8-foot-tall gate inside the lobby? Is that trust? There's no trust there now, is there? I'll remind you of my 18-point list of how I do not trust Kathy Allen. 18 points on there now. And, yes, that fence is one of the newest ones. And I would like this commission to try to stop Kathy Allen from mandating the surrender of a ballot when the voter approaches a precinct. Election Code 3015, it discusses the procedure when a ballot is surrendered. When a ballot is surrendered. It does not mandate the actual surrender. Kathy's doing this so that she can avoid doing signature comparisons. So I would like this board to try to get our March primary on Election Day to have the Board of Supervisors order Kathy Allen to not direct the public, to mandate the public surrender their ballots. Absolutely not. It is not required in law. By the way, there's lots of fraud that's documented. I believe it was heritage.org this week. I want to say it was heritage.org. I sent an email out to many people, and there's quite the database, nationwide database, of election fraud convictions. Many of them are in California. Plenty of election fraud convictions. Unfortunately, they're the small fish. They're like an elections clerk or something like that. It's not the big fish. We got to go after the big fish. But there's plenty of voter fraud in case all over the country. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else?
Speaking briefly of the voter rolls, I heard.
I just want to remind everybody we're on R1. We had a presentation from Dr. Frank, so if he can sort of bring it around to anything that he talked about, that would be great.
I think the majority of his presentation was about voter rolls.
Okay.
So getting back to voter rolls.
I wasn't just talking to you.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Very good. Voter rolls. I heard this afternoon that there was 9 separate state agencies that got their fingers into our voter rolls. So the actual control that we have locally is very questionable. One of the main avenues is the motor voter, the DMV. I'd just like to point out, especially since we have, I don't know how many millions of people flooding over our southern border right now, they're getting cell phones, driver's licenses, and all sorts of things like that. One of those things is a registration for a driver's license. On that, the majority of that application anymore is all about registering to vote. One of the first things you see on that is check the box. Are you a citizen? Yes or no? So the question was asked from Joanna about how do they determine whether that's true or not? Are they truly a citizen? Her answer was that they sign on the bottom where it says under penalty of perjury, that's true. I'm a citizen. That's the level of proof that they have. So under penalty of perjury. So I says, how do you... And it says right on there from the DMV, they are not responsible for checking whether you are a citizen or not. It says same on that same document. Joanna said it's not their role to check if they're a citizen. But if you want us to do a register a complaint, then there's a fraud division locally that you can request information on whether they're a citizen or not. And then there's a Secretary of State has a fraud hotline that can verify whether they're citizens or not. My thinking is there's nobody checking to see that they're citizens or not. They sign, and that's it. Something to look into. Thank you.
Lori Burchford, and I'm doing a comment after Dr. Frank's evidence that our elections are centrally controlled. I'm very impressed with his information. However, I will respectfully disagree with some of his comments about the sheriff's probable cause. I was hearing, and maybe the subcommittee can look into it or the appropriate people, that it is not being pursued. So I'd like clarification on that. I heard that on the radio recently, and so that's one point. The other one was previously kind of mentioned. Kathy Allen has had such a massive amount of issues, concerns, and problems that really we're losing count. And so I would never expect Dr. Frank to be abreast of it, even though he's respectfully saying she's really not the core person or problem or the office, that it's more the state. Agree, the state has their hands in a lot. This is why we have nullification and interposition. So for my response to his presentation is, it's more than a fence. Are we ever going to find out what the actual cost was and who authorized that? That sounds like this body should be able to pin that down. And why did the office have to move? So we have 2 locations. I still don't know what that's all about. And so back to trust, back to that crucial thing so we can somehow start clear, all right? And she got a huge raise for what? So, yeah, it's very tragic that the state is manipulating, and I have no doubt that he's able to access something from his basement in Ohio or anywhere else, but until we understand that we have a severe problem with Kathy Allen and her conduct, behavior, attitude, that whole budget hearing that we had last year was miserable. It was awful to observe and watch. So, plenty of issues. He's being extremely kind to kind of not, I guess what the people say, throw people under the bus. So those are kind of some of my issues. And the three people, again, I didn't quite get the names of who's going to be helping and get immediate contact with Dr. Laura Hobbs on some of these issues because time's running out. The election's March 5th. Jeff Lowe brought up a good point about the people coming across the border. So, again, there's just so much, and I'm grateful for all of you here. We're all here. None of us are getting paid. I'm at a lot of meetings, too, and I'm not getting paid. So thank you very much.
I would just like to make a comment here. I did speak with Sheriff Johnson this last week concerning the affidavits. I have not been involved in that process, but somebody wanted to meet with him, and I reached out to him to try to arrange that. And he said that he appointed an investigator. The investigator is working on it, and he said that it's taking quite a bit of time because there's a lot of verification that needs to be done, a lot of investigating and verification, and that he doesn't really want to meet with or talk with anybody about it because he doesn't want to be swayed. He wants to be completely neutral so that when he gets the investigative report, he can read it with theoretically an open mind. So that's what I was told by the sheriff personally. So I thought I'd let everybody know that.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else for public comment on R1? Okay. So moving on to R2. Approve Shasta County Election Commission bylaws for recommendation to Shasta County Board of Supervisors. So I just want to let you guys know right off the bat that I would like to table this till our next meeting because I'd like to do a little bit more research. There might be somebody else on the commission that hasn't had an opportunity to thoroughly review. So I'm just throwing that out there. So
I make a motion that we table this to our next regularly scheduled meeting.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion?
I'm sorry, who seconded?
Barrymore. Any discussion? Okay, any public comment? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. All right, R3, consider amendments to the 2024 Shasta County Election Commission meeting calendar.
I do have a question based on the bylaws. On it, it says that for the 3 months leading up to each regular and special election to allow observations and inspections, and for the 3 months following each regular.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you.
We have tabled the bylaws agenda item.
Okay, so how does that affect the calendar when there's a statement in the calendar that?
Well, that's something that you'll just bring back as
okay.
a comment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we'll deal with it then.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So as for the calendar, we're basically going to meetings every 2 weeks and taking July off unless we find that we need a meeting. And then there's some issues in November where we've got 2 meetings a week apart, and December is a little screwy too, but any comments or any conflicts?
Just that last week in November, I'm not available.
The last week, we're not having any meetings the last week, yeah. Any issues on your part?
Just, I mean, I had mentioned before, I'm not sure the dates yet, but there will be a time in April that I'm not available, could coincide. And Since we're increasing the meetings, is there any chance that we could move it back to the 2 o'clock time?
Yes.
Yeah. The only reason we've had it at 12 and 1 was we were having Dr. Frank today, and we had the bylaws today, which we're not getting to. Otherwise, we'd be going till 5. You know, so it's going to depend. But, yes, we can set it for 2 generally, but if we have something special, we might have to move it to 1. Okay. All right, so any other discussion, any public comment on our calendar? Okay, do I have a motion?
I make a motion. We approve the calendar as submitted.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay, R4, take the following actions. Discuss the costs and process to apply for and obtain a copy of publicly available elections records in accordance with the Shasta County fee schedule, including the electronic election reporters voter files. That's part one. And we really already had this discussion at a previous meeting, and we talked about the fact that a copy of the voter rolls costs $40, so we don't really have any discussion about that unless somebody has something they want to say about that.
Sorry. I would like the voter rolls to include active, inactive, and canceled records so we can see the full picture.
Okay.
As far as the expenditure, there was just supposed to be a connection to getting a report on how much we are spending and have some idea. I mean, it's just $40, but...
That's a good point. Do you want to address that, Kristen?
Yes, thank you, Chair. The Chief Deputy Clerk, Stephanie Blankenship, who is not able to be here today, did prepare a spreadsheet and did send that out earlier today. I believe she was going to email that to all of you as well. If she has not yet, she will be doing so as soon as she can. So that has been prepared, so you'll have that handy.
Okay. So I don't know if Joanna is willing, but would you be willing to come up and just address, because I think there's some part of what Bev just said that cannot be released about the, what was it you said, the active, inactive, and
the canceled.
Canceled. Thank you for doing that. I mean, why, might as well just get it all cleared up right here.
Well, she's coming. I'll just say I'm fine with the $40 if that's, I mean, just without our numbers in front of us, I'm fine with going forward on that.
So we cannot release the canceled records. According to state law, those are confidential as soon as a voter is put into the canceled file, and those aren't public record for 100 years, so we can't release any canceled records.
So what is on there that would be different than the active or inactive that makes it, and what law is it that you're quoting?
So I don't have the law right on top of my head, but it's in the 2000s of election code that you can search that up. It is, and what can you clarify your question? Because I'm confused by it.
Okay. Usually if something's going to be marked confidential, there's a reason. Now, if I get access to the active and the inactive, what fields is on the closed or canceled record that is not on?
The fields are all the same, but just by law.
So why is it?
So by law, the voter file is actually confidential. It's not a public information. Someone can't come in, just anyone can't come into our office and look up the voter file.
Well, we're not just somebody. We're.
I understand that. So there's certain regulations that allow that to happen, but under California law, the canceled record is confidential. That's what our legislators have decided to do.
So could we get it from the state?
You can request it from the state if you would like. They have different costs and different things with that, but we will not release the canceled records.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming up there and doing that. I appreciate that. Okay. So the second part of this is approve expenditures and direct the members of the ad hoc committee formed to examine the voter rolls to purchase at 2 different points in time such records to the extent allowed by law and in the amounts allowed by the fee schedule. So what the request is that the subcommittee that Ms. Gray and I are on to look at the voter rolls, that we're able to purchase two voter rolls, so it's an expenditure of $80 at a time that yet to be determined.
It's fine.
Okay. Okay. Any public comment about this?
Good to see you again. We have the canceled voters for half of the counties in California. That's perfectly legal. I think she's mistaken. We get those all the time, and we use that to do some of our research. So the idea that the election commission, is being denied access to what half of the counties in California are providing is just simply incorrect. Second thing is, how come you have to pay for your voter rolls? The parties don't even have to pay for your voter rolls. That's confusing to me. You should have, Kathy Darling should be providing those to you. I don't know why you have to pay for that. You're the government. The parties don't have to pay for it even. That's confusing to me. So those are my questions and comments, I guess.
Thank you.
I just want to reiterate, through different multiple counties across the state, we get canceled voter registration records. There's nothing in the law, and I find that it's kind of awkward that the county that's coming in here and talking about defending that position doesn't actually know the law or didn't bring or come prepared for that. I hope that the commission gets that, because the Secretary of State gives those records. Counties, multiple counties across the state give those records. There's never been any law that's been cited. There's never been any obstruction to that or any difficulty in acquiring those. There is a classification of voters that we do not have a right to, and that's a protected class of voters. Judges, certain elected officials, people in protective custody, they still have a right to vote, and we want to make sure that their privacy and their rights are protected in those situations. But even then, shouldn't we still know how many of those people voted in our election? Shouldn't we be able to at least simply acquire that to say, hey, in the protected class, you can't know who they are, but 1,142 people of that class voted. So that's in efforts towards transparency. A canceled voter is the least risky voter for us to have access to as the public or organizations, or especially an elected, an appointed commission. Why? Because they have to re-register to vote. Your active and inactive inactive and active voters are considered your eligible voters in this state. Canceled voters are considered ineligible to vote. So an active voter is going to get a vote by mail ballot, can turn that in any way, shape, or form, or go vote in person. An inactive voter can go vote in person, simply giving their name and address without presenting ID. Or be able to go and contact the county and say, hey, I'm an inactive voter, so please send me a vote by mail ballot, and they therefore become active again. But they're both eligible. So the canceled voters, it's the least risky for us to know those. But here's the thing. The patterns and the changes in those voter rolls, and I look forward to working with each of you that wants to work with us, where let's say you have a roll that you pull on the first of this month and you have a certain amount of voters that have no vote history at all. And then another month later, you pull another roll, and some of those same voters now have a vote history where they didn't. When you have two rolls comparatively, and from one to another, there's voters that don't change status, but they in fact actually just completely disappear from our rolls, maybe there's something to explain that. Certain situation, like a woman gets married, we know that those records can be merged and there can be new identifications that are issued. But that doesn't cover every situation, at least from a common sense analysis. So the canceled rolls, they should be publicly available. They're the least risky, and we get them all over the state. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And in all fairness to our voter, our election official, she was caught off guard. I asked her to come up, so she wasn't prepared for answering whatever. Yeah.
Hi there. Thank you. And she has not been caught off guard, because I did a public records request asking for that very thing, the canceled voters, and she gave me a list of codes which she thought applied but had actually no relevance to the canceled voters. So she has that information easily at her disposal. I could probably
look it up on my email right now and tell you the codes that she cited in that public records request rejection. So what I'd like to talk about is that, first of all, I do have access to voter rolls, being a candidate, and I found I had to analyze the zip codes within District 2. I found zip codes in there belonging to a whole entirely different county, and I'm talking about the domicile, the area where you lay your head at night. That's your domicile, the place where you live, not your mailing address. And it had a zip code of Trinity County, and I had multiple. I haven't counted exactly how many, but I'm guessing in the range of 50 to 100. So I'd like to speak to the fact that Stephanie Blankenship did not provide the budget information that you guys needed in order to adequately address this agenda item. There's obvious obstruction and obfuscation that is occurring here on this commission. It should not be tolerated. This is insubordinance. They're stymieing the progress of this commission, and I think this needs to be elevated to the county CEO and to others who are responsible for making sure that the county employees are actually serving in the capacity that they should be. Because if they're not, they need to be fired. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any other public comment? Oh, Stuart, yes, please. One second, please.
Chair Lund, thank you. I just wanted to clarify real fast. I have not seen confirmation of the budget documents yet. However, I am confident that the $80 expenditure that this commission, should they decide to make it, to request voter rolls from the clerk and registrar of voters' office, will not break the budget.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, I wanted to make a comment. When an individual is working at the ROV office, whether it's Joanna or Kathy or another designee, I would expect them to be available like that to come up here and answer a question, not just sit there on their cell phone or, in other cases, knitting and crocheting, okay? When they're paid to be here, they should be absolutely so ready, that, so okay?
That, yeah, this is about us purchasing.
Yeah, I know, but I just want to clarify that this whole thing on... we caught you off guard. No. People need to be here from this office for this election committee advisory commission. I am looking at the information on the zip code thing, the stymied process. I don't like foot dragging at all, and I don't like insubordination either. And so there are a few of us tracking, and I'm with Shasta County Citizen Journalist, and we do get tips, anonymous tips sometimes, on conduct, behavior, and so forth. So I would like to understand what's going on with these records, the cost, and that whole thing with the domicile. Is there a way to get that spelled out exactly? Because people can be in an alley, in a car, anywhere. And so I would like to have that.
My understanding is that they can give an intersection or even a physical description, on the middle of the block between, it has to be a place somebody can find, but theoretically it has to be in Shasta County.
No, and then they're getting moved if they're at these camps. So we already know that this is just to disguise, I think, some of the migrants, immigrants, illegals, whatever you want to call it. And in case I can't stay much longer for the next one, I understand Dr. Doug Frank is going to be at the hearth at 5:30 for people if they have more questions, just because this is a very important issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Christian, are you coming up?
Yeah. I would like to thank the lecturer's office for at least trying to answer the commission. And I have full faith that there's no malice. There's no, there's no hanky-panky. They may have the code right. They may not. And I really look forward to finding out that myself. The other thing, I want to thank the commission for trying to facilitate a smooth meeting, and I will try to do my part within my First Amendment rights.
Great, appreciated. Greatly appreciated. Thank you. Okay, so we have
I'd like to make a motion.
Perfect.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the expenditures and direct the members of the ad hoc committee formed to examine the voter rolls to purchase at two different points in time, as allowed by law and the fee schedule.
Do I have a second?
I have an addition to that.
That's what's recommended on the agenda.
Okay.
We can have discussion. So what is it that you want to discuss?
I wanted to include the canceled votes.
Well, yeah, that's
something. My motion stands.
Okay. I would just suggest that if we talk with the Registrar of Voters Office and it's determined that that can be included, it would be included and would not be an additional cost. So that's something we can either work out with the registrar or not.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add that the agenda language does contain such records to the extent allowed by law. So that would include whatever is lawfully available. And right. If canceled information is available, then that would include it.
Well, it looks like the law has been interpreted two different ways.
So that option is in the agenda language.
Okay. Yeah. It was also in my motion.
Yeah. Okay.
I second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and we've already had public comment. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Okay, moving on to R5. Let's start at this end this time. Bev, do you have anything to report?
No. I do have one request, is that we asked the BOS if we could get judges appointed to help us in the review of the voter rolls, because it's going to be a big task.
Pardon? As an ad hoc committee, I mean, my understanding, if I'm not mistaken, we could bring some people in that want to volunteer to. When she's saying judges, she's not talking about formal judges. She's talking about like election judges,
right.
I think, right?
Right, right.
Are you saying that you just want help? You just want people to help?
Yeah, because we're going to need people to go out canvassing door to door. We're going to need people to look at the stuff. I mean,
So this is. I have a question. So we're receiving a report. We're not allowed to discuss this. Is that correct?
Right. I would. Well, you may not need this as an item, but yes, I would recommend confining your comments to receiving reports at this time.
Okay. How do I get?
Yeah, we can discuss. I can discuss with you after. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get it on the agenda to discuss next time.
Thank you.
Okay.
I want to review for people who may have missed it last time that for the elections data issues, the committee that Barrymore and I and myself are on, that we discussed and decided that we were waiting we were hoping to hear from Justin Grimmer, is that how you say his name, and then being able to evaluate all the presentations we've received together and then make a presentation to the commission. I still stand by that. I think it makes the most sense. I did, however, look just again at what Mrs. Hobbs presented, and that's what I had brought up earlier with her graph saying that the data is based on randomized assumptions of randomized data, but when I looked at the data that the elections office had, it didn't look randomized. But that's just something to look into further. That's just my only report on that.
Okay, thank you.
Wait, but that's only, sorry, my only report on that one. I'm also on the committee for installation of camera surveillance, and though we haven't had a chance to meet outside of the board chambers here and discuss that, I did information from a citizen who looked into getting cameras and based on the number. Here, hold on, pulling it up here. There is a local business that estimated that it would cost $1,000 to $2,000 per camera, and that citizen also wondered if, like, her and her husband were interested in donating money towards that, and I wasn't sure if that's something that could be allowed. I wasn't sure if the county can receive private funds to fund cameras at election boxes. Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay. yeah, just to follow up a little bit on some of the things that Dr. Michaud mentioned. I agree with her that it would be better to have more information as we look at the data in terms of the MESA pattern of fraud. In terms of other activities going on, the Registrar of Voters' Office sent out late last week an email to elections observers, people who are interested in observing elections, and I would just like to remind people who are interested in observing the elections that it would be a great idea to read through that so that there is a degree of expectation about the rights and responsibilities of observers, the rights and responsibilities of the election staff, and the expectation for behavior of everybody. I think that will go a long way toward us being able to have constructive dialogue if we all have an understanding of what is and isn't allowed. I'd also just like to point out again that election observation is just that, watching the process. It is not an interactive training. To the extent that our Registrar of Voters' Office has answered questions, that's wonderful, but we cannot be getting in the way of them actually doing their work. So I hope with that everybody will come to this process in the spirit of that, so that we are watching together, working together, cooperating together. And that's kind of all I have, I think. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to get an update on the item that we forwarded to the Board of Supervisors. I noticed that it's not on the agenda, and I'm a little dismayed because had we had taken an alternative action and just asked our in-house election expert to make a legal finding as to whether or not this commission has standing to review the signatures for the recall, we would have had the answer today. So is there an update on that?
Yeah, well, that isn't up to us. It's been up to the clerk of the board and council who's getting it prepared for the Board of Supervisors. Mr. Boutel was going to see if he could get it on the agenda for the 30th, and if not, the 6th of February.
And then I also wanted to ask either counsel or the clerk, we are having our bylaws on the next agenda. Is it possible to vote on the bylaws and then have an election for chairman and vice chair after the bylaws go into effect?
So Stephanie had told me, and Stuart, I don't know if you want to speak to this. Do you want to speak to it, what I was told?
I'm going to try and paraphrase badly, so bear with me, and if you need to jump in, please do.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, because this commission was formed, I'll say in the later portion of 2023, it's at the discretion of this commission if they would like to revisit having an election for a chair and vice chair, or if they would like to continue with the current chair and vice chair, again, at the discretion of the commission. And Chair Lund, please chime in if I said
that. Well, yeah, I was told by Stephanie that because we started so late in the year and because we just became a commission and because we haven't passed any bylaws that we're working under, by the time we do, that I should just stay in office for the year. So that was basically
I think the rest of the commission could chime in on that. I personally would like to give Dr. Michaud a shot.
Before, you know, without speaking to items that are not on the agenda, I would say that to address your earlier question of whether it is possible to have at the next meeting consideration of the bylaws first, and then subsequently whether you would like to have a vote of the chair and vice chair, you can certainly do that as back to back.
That's fine. I don't have any objection to that.
Thank you. That's all I.
Okay. Okay. So. Yeah. Well. So, anything else from you? Okay. Yeah. I had the sheriff, the meeting with the sheriff, to report, which I already did. So I don't have anything else there. No, because we're not voting. I don't need to take public comment for the commissioner's reports.
No, you do not, since there's no action item that's pending. It is at the discretion of the chair.
Okay.
So, sorry, following up on that. Then for R1, for example, where it's just a presentation, we would, I mean, just theoretically, wouldn't need to take public comment.
That is correct. And then... you know, the agenda description could be updated if you felt like that needed to be clarified.
Okay, moving on to R6, take the following actions: discuss and determine election issues for which the commission may wish to provide recommendations to the Shasta County Board of Supervisors, and 2, direct 2 or fewer commissioners per item to prepare draft recommendations for the commission to consider approving for board consideration at a future commission meeting. This is our ongoing item, and I just would like to address, I've got this list of, you know, our ad hoc committees here in front of me, and the very first one that we created was with me and Ms. Gray, and the way that it was worded, it pretty much includes allowing us to look at anything. That said, going down to the second from the bottom, that's the one about examining the voter rolls and report back to the committee at a future date with recommendations to present to the Board of Supervisors. So I just want to say it sounds like Bev, and I haven't talked with her about this, but it sounds like Bev has a much more encompassing plan to do stuff with vote related to voter rolls and around voter rolls. I think that the two ad hoc committees that we already have that have the two of us on it encompass everything enough that we can just do that without creating or approving anything else. But I would like to counsel to weigh in on that and whether we should, you know, whether you see any issues with that.
Can you repeat that one more time?
Yeah. So do you have a copy of this? Okay.
I do.
Okay. So the very first one, it says, review and investigate election issues, including but not limited to blah, blah, blah. And then the second one from the bottom is examine the voter rolls and report back to the committee at a future date with recommendations to present to the Board of Supervisors. Well, we might examine the voter rolls, whatever examine means, you know, look at the data, whatever, examine. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like she has a plan from what she just said earlier at this meeting, you know, maybe doing some canvassing, maybe pulling some members into the ad hoc committee to help. And I'm thinking that between those two ad hoc committees that we already have created, that we should be able to do what she's thinking, which I haven't talked to her about yet, but from what she alluded to earlier.
I believe Stuart has some comments.
Okay.
So just to chime in on that same note, I want to caution the commissioners, and I'll defer to counsel a little bit, but I want to caution the commissioners on bringing people into ad hoc committees, because this commission voted to form that ad hoc committee composed of two commissioners, and that is all. So I'm going to put a pin in that for just a second. That being said, the members of that ad hoc committee can do the work and put together a report or a recommendation that they can then bring back to this commission to present to the Board of Supervisors, really to ask the board for authority, or the board can grant some action that this commission is requesting. Does that make sense?
Not completely, because I understand with other commissions, they have ad hoc committees and they pull different people in at different times for all kinds of different reasons.
And I can speak to that. I was mentioning that I could, based off of a conversation, you know, after the meeting, which might be just better just for the purposes of efficiency, is with the scope of the ad hoc, we can talk about, you know, what you're trying to accomplish and then resolve those issues there as to not take up time now.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Ms. Barrymore?
I would just like to add on to that. Thinking about this from a workflow perspective, as somebody who has done a fair amount of canvassing in this county, canvassing every single voter is going to be a behemoth job. So that in the course of that, we should think about the amount of time that's going to take, how that fits into the scope of work of this commission. As somebody who's done a lot of canvassing, getting volunteers and ensuring the continuity and quality of that work is going to be a really heavy lift. If you can come up with a way that we could somehow do a random sampling, that might be a good idea. But I think we're going to get way into the weeds and way bogged down in the mud if we start taking on volunteers to go out and knock on doors, because a lot of people were very uncomfortable with that happening to them in our community as well. So
I never said anything about knocking on every door. Okay. It would be after looking at the roles, looking at those things that are jumping out.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we really know what the scope of what she... Yeah, I have to figure out what the scope is. Okay, so anybody have any items for this agenda item?
I do. Going back to the cameras, I would like to present to the board the information that we have on the cameras, the company, their estimate, and the possibility of having citizens contribute to that.
I would also like to see that let's make sure that we are compliant with the law. How cameras are posted is a big deal, because ballot boxes are as secret as a ballot itself. Also, we've got to figure this out however we do this. We cannot keep operating as a commission with input from members of the community and keep working around the Registrar of Voters Office. When we have an election official come into this meeting, just because she can't pull one of the thousands of laws she has to follow up right at the exact moment that a spontaneous question comes up, we still need to treat her as an actual valid expert resource in this process. We cannot keep trying to make election changes around the elections officials.
My suggestion was not, and with any disregard to the RRV's office, it was just an understanding of our relationship with the Board of Supervisors and the community. So we've done some research. I'd like to present that to the Board of Supervisors. I see it then as up to the Board of Supervisors to communicate with the ROV their desires, whatever they might be, in implementing that.
I would like to suggest that we try to have that interaction at this level first, because we already know that the relationship between our Board of Supervisors and our elections office is even more fractured than the one with this commission.
May I suggest that since it's currently an ad hoc committee item, that you do bring it back as an item for the next agenda, and then with that, if you have a recommendation, that can, so there's discussion by the commission at the next meeting, and then if you wish to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors at that time, you may.
So am I mistaken? I thought at our last meeting we had approved increasing the scope of the ad hoc committee working on cameras to include anything related to cameras.
Correct. There's no...
But I'm asking, Kristen, I'm wondering if you can pull up the minutes.
You're right, but what is that related to?
I would support bringing that back as an agenda item so that we can fully vet out the issues.
I'm confused, though. I thought that the two of you just...
I think what Lisa's saying is she's ready to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
What I'm saying is I'd like to present to the Board of Supervisors the information that there's a private company who can provide cameras and memory cards for this price so that they can consider, is this an amount that they'd even want to consider for the county? Is this something that...
I think that needs like to be that? Part of our whole recommendation related to cameras. So if you want to get that to them sooner than later, then you and I need to get together in the next week.
How can their decision be part of our recommendation? I'm saying I want to present them the information so that they can discuss it and decide whether they're interested.
I'm okay with that presentation. I just want part of, before we ship this up to the board, that we as a commission have talked about the cost of cameras, what we think about it, how the law applies to whatever ideas the ad hoc committee comes up. Right. That's my biggest concern.
Well, right, because let's say we recommend that there only be 10 cameras or 5 cameras or whatever number you want to pick. I mean, we have to have a number so that they know how many. I mean, how would they know how many they want
to
pick?
They would have to base that on their budget and their their priorities.
So the way the county budget works, though, is a purchase like that would have to be pre-budgeted. So there probably isn't much wiggle room in the existing budget. However, the county is going into the budget process for next year, which starts July 1. If you think that you're ready to kick something up to the board, bring it back to this commission to vote on, and we can discuss whether or not we'd like to send a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. I'm in support of doing that.
Right. I mean, my information that I wanted to send to them isn't particularly a recommendation. It's information for their ability to make a decision on it. And if there are citizens that are interested in contributing budget-wise to that, then that would obviously change the time frame of when they could do that.
Given the scope of how the ad hoc committees were drafted, it's to discuss and determine election issues for which the commission may wish to provide recommendations to the board. So even if that is in kind of the format of presentation of information, it's not as if the ad hoc would go directly to the board without having consensus of the commission as a whole. But in terms of what the chair had asked about the scope, it doesn't affect the scope. You can definitely have that. But it sounds as if to address everyone's issues and concerns about having the opportunity to review and discuss before it goes to the board, my recommendation is to add this as an agenda item at the next meeting.
I'm fine with bringing it back again. I'm just confused because I thought the whole discuss and determine election issues for which the commission may wish to provide recommendations, that making that decision was included in our ongoing R6. But it sounds like we're going to have to make a separate agenda item each time?
The ad hoc committees aren't authorized to actually do anything other than bring back to our agenda for the commission to consider as a whole.
Right, but I'm saying, is that covered under R6 or each time we need to make a separate agenda item?
You would have had to have already drawn up whatever your recommendation was. Yeah. We would have had to agendize it.
So and it has to be a separate item.
And then we would have all received copies. The public would have received the copy. And then...
Correct. To answer Commissioner Michaud's question, the purpose of that agenda item is to essentially create an ad hoc committee and then appoint members to that ad hoc committee so they can meet without being subject to the requirements of the Brown Act. And then once they have something formulated, then come back to the commission and then have the commission take action to make a recommendation to the board or to any other action within its scope as a whole, as a commission to the board.
Okay, so are we going to handle it within the ad hoc committee that we already have for drop boxes, or are you going to do something separate?
Really, I'm not suggesting a separate ad hoc committee.
I just want to share a thought with the commissioners, and if I'm significantly off base, you can throw cabbage at me, I understand. The thought to some degree is, you know, if any commissioner wants to just share information with the Board of Supervisors, you have that mechanism. You can submit an email to the clerk of the board. That goes in as official part of the record. If it's just getting that information to the board, if the commission wants to make a recommendation on behalf of the entire commission, then it falls back into, I think, what our council has advised, which is it needs to be considered by this commission, voted on, and then agendized for the Board of Supervisors. So I just wanted to throw that out there, just if it helps. And if not, incoming cabbage, I get it.
No cabbage here.
So does anybody remember, Kristen, were you able to find?
I apologize, Chair. I am not sure what you're asking me about the scope of the ad hoc committee.
So at our last meeting, we either approved increasing the scope of the ad hoc committee, or we got into the same verbal issues with that last item that we have on the agenda. And we decided that we had to bring it back this time to increase it, which then it didn't get on the agenda. But I think we already approved it. Anybody remember? And we don't have the minutes.
I remember there was a bouncing ball with that, but I don't think anyone on the commission disputes that the what Lisa is talking about is within the scope of what her ad hoc committee was assigned to do.
Yeah.
We
do
also
need to formalize it, though, because
I also would encourage you, if you're able to speak at open time, not as a commissioner, but as an individual, to the board, if you want to make them aware of, hey, you know, there's this company out there. Nothing is stopping any of us from doing that, if you wanted to kind of get to them quicker.
Sherilyn, to answer your question regarding the item R3 at the last meeting, that was to increase the scope of the ad hoc, but the scope of the ad hoc to broadly deal with Dropbox issues in general is separate from the procedural question that Commissioner Michaud had, which is, you know, whether or not to bring back, I guess, kind of the findings of the ad hoc for review by the commission before making a recommendation to the board, or just to directly send information from the ad hoc directly to the board.
Oh, yeah, okay. Perfect. Thank you very much for that. Okay, any other... Okay. Okay. All right. Anything else for R6? Any public comment for R6?
Hi there. Laura Hobbs, candidate for District 2 Supervisor.
You have been asked not to say that.
So I would just like to say that waiting for Justin Grimmer in order to move forward with the ad hoc committee is not a wise idea. Justin Grimmer has a degree in political science. The only way to refute data is with better data. I've been to Justin Grimmer's website, and he has not done any publicly available analysis of cast vote record data.
Ms. Hobbs, I'm sorry. So we're on R6, and the only...
My suggestion is to vote now and be done with it.
The only thing we discussed on R6. Perfect. Thank you. Okay. The only thing that we discussed on R6 was an item about drop boxes.
So this applies to that as well, which is I feel like there's a lack of forward motion with this board. I mean, I appreciate your time as volunteers and everything, but just to the common observer, it looks like your wheels are spinning. I would like to see more definitive action, and I recommend that you vote on it and be done with it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else for public comment? I don't either.
Process is important.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm not running for office, so just make it clear.
Okay, R6,
Chris. R6. It sounds to me like there's a bit of confusion, and I'm wondering if good policy would be to have what you're voting on completely nailed down and clear and presented to the public before we, I'm not too sure even, I mean, looking at the agenda, I'm not too sure what you're voting on. You know, it's like if we can get the commission to get clear and narrow it down so it's bam, 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 that would be my recommendation to the commission. Also, I'd recommend that the commission follows the law.
Thank you.
Lori Bridgeford commenting on final agenda here, R6. When I heard the previous comment that it should be tabled or wait or do more here with this commission, it just, again, feels like it's just painfully dragging feet, taking more time. And for the comment that we shouldn't send it on to the Board of Supervisors because it's even a more fractured relationship, how did we get to that point? Dissect that. How did we get to that point? So that should not be an issue that, oh, we're not going to bother them. Let's just spin our wheels for a longer time. That relationship was damaged by the conduct and behavior of the ROV. And all the Board of Supervisors had was legitimate and valid questions. Thank you.
Okay, anybody else for public comment? All right, then the meeting is adjourned.